Lev.
Is there a way to get it on the screen? If not, we're okay.
It's not coming up.
Oh, from Willard Straight.
Yes, yes.
Oh, it's the same mic from Willard Straight.
Yes.
My old friend.
Yes. We're going to try to get the video on the screen and then.
And this is me.
Looks like you have five voting members on the screen.
Are you guys good with mics? I don't have any.
How many is that right now?
Six, five, plus R1.
We're probably one of us.
All the second table?
Yeah.
Oh, gotcha.
So that why?
I don't know why this one doesn't work. So channel 58, we have the same mic. Check, check, check. There you go. Check, check, one, two, check, one, two. Check, one, two. Check, one, two. Check one, two.
Just a little longer.
Check one, two. Check one, two.
Thank you.
So if voice of Monday, April 14th, that should be at the Austin and Friday. So then we have local. Divya Akaraju. Amina Akpan.
Present.
Lucia Dallas Friari.
Present.
Lizzie Vera. Isato Berry.
Present.
Franklin Berry.
Present.
Simone Chan. Rocco Di Lorenzo.
Present.
Zora Durham.
Present.
David Diao.
Present.
Karis Everett.
Present.
Christian Flournoy. Allison Helkowski. Niles Pike.
Present.
Cassandra Jordan.
Present.
Sion, Ken is present, I remember now. Clyde Biederman.
Present.
Laura Men.
Present.
Yash Moitra. Suraj Parikh.
Present.
Casey Platkin.
Present.
Imani Rizaka.
Present.
Noon Speller Sun.
I'm holding her proxy.
David Suarez.
Present.
Benjamin Terhar. Claire Ting.
Present.
Adam Vinson.
Present.
Amy Wang.
Present.
Patrick Keel.
Present.
Now we're going to read an acknowledgement. Cornell University is located on the traditional homeland of the Gayogo, the Cheetah Nation. The Gayogo are members of the Hanadasi Confederacy and aligned with Six Sovereign Nation with a historic and contemporary presence on this land. The Confederacy precedes the establishment of Cornell University, New York State, and the United States of America. We acknowledge the thankfulness to the Gayogo, its possession and honor, the ongoing connection of Gayogo people, past and present, to these lands and the world. So for today's special meeting, we're going to give the approval of minutes. Are there any announcements on the floor?
I have one, if that's okay.
Okay. What's your announcement, JP?
Okay, sorry. So I'm starting the home plate initiative, which is to increase interactions between students and other community members. So Hey Depew, who is the employee elected trustee, has kindly offered to host a few students in her home for a dinner to get to know her. She's really, really nice. And I just wanted to offer to student assembly representatives, if anyone would be interested to having dinner with her and just talking about shared interests on campus. So thanks.
Okay. for that announcement anymore this time? Okay, so we're going to move on to the public comment section. Is there anyone in the public or community that would like to speak at this time? So we're going to move on to the consent calendar to get that and presentations. So if the office will add the next day, you want to step forward.
Hello, everybody. I will be delivering the ordinary introduction to this long-term document. Of course, before I have myself, the first thing to address is the present delays that it took to get this document to you today. I deeply apologize on behalf of myself and my entire office for that, but those delays came from a place of concern over the vast allegations in this document. We spent day, night, way too late into the night, and not sleeping to ensure that we were able to represent as many facts and allegations as possible, which is what makes this document so long. And I'm just happy to be able to get it to you guys right now, right before the office are about to start. So with that, I'm just going to move into, I guess, more of the rationale behind this document, and after that, I'll take any questions that you guys have. So the first area I want to address is the back section. There, I want to essentially go through the process that we took as a committee or as an office to gain all our facts and also solicit allegations or receive allegations as well. The Office of Ethics Board conducted a wide array of interviews that covered about 103 pages of just pure single space interview documents that we had parsed through and rebuilt the timeline. And from there, we reached out to everybody who interviewed with us, and we also received more anonymous information as well that was compiled into an evidentiary document. And from those, we corroborated the timelines. And we built our first initial timeline that went through a lot of review just to ensure some equity concerns. Specifically, we wanted to ensure that no one testimony overpowered all the rest. We wanted every person who reached out to us to have a space in our document to be able to publish these, and if that did not necessarily match up, or if we were not able to eventually verify those things, we make sure to indicate that, of course, all allegations are indicated, the allegations and all facts are presented as being corroborated by evidence or very corroborated by testimonies by a wide array of people. From there, I want to move into a brief, I guess, discussion of not the contents, but the rationale of how the office conducted its votes. As chair, I'm not a voting member on the assembly, and I'm also not a voting member of the office of ethics. So in this report, I convey the will of that committee. I think we're all the members of the union, also not a co-leading and everybody else who took the time out of it. But essentially, in that, we tried to apply a dual standard in order to accomplish the thing. So one of, I guess, the more difficult things to explain is how we went from facts to then assessing that for concerns. From there, we started with a wide array of questions which served as our guide throughout the interview process. From those questions, we then, I guess, from the documents, solicited facts to corroborate or to disprove all those things. Going through from those, we then sought to assess the code of ethics, whether or not any of those facts, whether proved or not, were violations of the code of ethics. And from there, if we determined that there was a violation of the code of ethics, we then moved to define our confidence in that piece of information as a fact. And from there, there's a figure about it, but it was a very sliding process, which is that there were many assessments where we reached the okay, we believe that there is a substantial ethical violation here. It's like, well, how much do we believe that? Not that much, but let's go back. Let's look at more information. Because of that, the interview process took about 20 days complete with, of course, the information we received well into last night due to the review process that we had every directly mentioned person who was being investigated participate in. I'd like to give a special thanks to Clyde, Rocco, Claire, and Catherine. You guys provided attachment with those for reflected in the document while also being cognizant of, I guess, other testimony that was provided and other evidence. But yeah, with that, so the two standards that we used were preponderance, and we also used clear convincing. So preponderance is about a 50-50, and there it's a much lower bar to essentially say something is more likely to have happened than another. And I will say that for the preponderance bar, the main, I guess, analysis of the opposite ethics, for facts that remain in that range, can be testimony versus a lot of testimony, or no testimony versus a lot of testimony. So it's reviewing that and corroborating it with few facts, typically, to determine which timeline it was the most accurate. Because of that, we also provided two different types of recommendations. The first four we refer to as more disciplinary recommendations, but I want to add a little bit of a caveat to it, which is more so that in coming up with our first four recommendations, we made consider the opposite ethics was to end our entire process, was to give the student assembly the information they needed, but also the chance to respond to a lot of information that students, across campus have received in various news publications. So with that, the Office of Ethics, alongside those recommendations, does not actually prescribe what it expects the assembly to do. It simply gives the assembly the opportunity to discuss it itself, using its power to determine how it wishes to proceed, of which it has two options to proceed. But going back to that, all of those end up, or every claim that led us to identifying of those, I guess, four, yes, those four recommendations stemmed from evidence and claims that reached, at least in the mind of the Office of Ethics, is a clear and convincing standard. For that, we depended heavily on submitted evidence. We were able to retain a long array of screenshots, videos, audio recordings that corroborated a lot of claims. And those are reflected in that there's a standard. Everything for the preponderance of evidence is used to create what we call, recommendations that are intended to guide the assembly or prevent a lot of what the Office of Ethics perceive to be either gaps or just areas of clarification that the assembly could benefit from addressing. Off the top of my head, one is a strengthening of its ethics and election wins. One thing that the Office of Ethics found throughout the entire investigation, of course, is a very long document, and it stems all the way from 2022 onwards. The fact that there are this many allegations and this many people continued wishing to be heard that we weren't able to hear really started there with the Office of Ethics, especially as we were founded very close to that time. And in fact, during the 2023 school year, that's primarily when the bylaw amendments for the Office of Ethics were being debated. So, we, reflected that in our recommendations. We additionally just read off a couple and provide more of a rationale for them. They're okay with this. So, one was defining rules either in the form of a governing document amendment or resolution. Governing offered transparency for resolutions by October 1st, 2024. One claim that was really corroborated, but only to a preponderance, was the idea of resolutions being presented to the board that had either allegations or very few pieces of strong factual evidence that suggested that there were more potential sponsors behind it than originally stated. One core holding, or not holding, but opinion of the Office of Ethics throughout this recommendation was an adherence to transparency. This idea that everybody's opinions or chance to convey their thoughts on the floor and have those thoughts attributed to them. So that reflects as well a lot of these recommendations. And additionally, the last one, reflects a change to the election rules, specifically asking the assembly by October 1st, 2024, that it was chosen to give the new version of the assembly, all of the lovely people who will be joining us next year, the ability to also, have mandate to be able to address these issues through this development. It simply falls on election rules and conflict of interest in attendance of the assembly. And it's not reflecting the printed version, but it's better reflected in, the version of Resolution 74, specifically regarding student organizations and their ability to, give recommendations. course, you know, this is something that certain types of students in a sorority and a lot of those students felt shared, you know, the same thoughts. Of course, those thoughts should never be held against anyone. Sorry, excuse me, there's a good time, but should never be held against anybody, but the opposite of it sound that, or, you know, heavily connected that, but the benefit as well. That allowing for gaps, that allowed for members of executive boards to be able to also be involved in things like, or have the organization be involved in endorsing candidates, could be a slippery slope that could allow for, I guess, a lot of ramification. So it allows a very long, I guess, introduction, not as long as I propose, but with that, I'll take any questions on the document.
Trying to navigate the document, trying to find like the most clear and concise location to see all the recommendations of the Office of Ethics. What page would you recommend? Like, so far I'm looking at page 36, which seems to have quite a few of the votes that the office held, talking about, you know, no ethical violations found, or I'm assuming affirmative, which is to say that there was a ethical violation found.
Oh yeah, So briefly explain that. So essentially, like, a three-part process. So one is confirming the validity of an event. Or reflecting onto in the first pages, it lists a long array of questions as to whether or not it is happening. The Office of Ethics primarily serves to, I guess, validate whether or not those things had happened. And of course, not all of those things were found to be an ethical violation. So the ethical violation part is actually the secondary. So that is really like how the votes are go. There's an affirmation as to whether or not an event happened, then an assessment of whether or not there's an actual ethics violation. And if there was one found, it had to be held by either moderate to the evidence or clear convincing evidence. And then areas defined in that are, I guess, in resolution or in section. There are a lot, but there are section A, B, and C, and those correspond to sections 2, 3, and 4, respectively. So all of the Office of Ethics' opinions on section 2, which involve this year, I guess, allegations and facts learned by the Office of Ethics regarding President Duell, Vice President Waterman, and Vice President Lorenzo, are covered in A. All of the ones from this year are then covered in B. For those 3.5 million people. And for C, it goes all focus on executive best.
So, first off, then, once you know you want to use the done in this investigation, you can also receive some pedigree for the document, and this is what you've done to see the bottom of all the audience in the community. This is kind of a point of this incredibly unorganization side of things. Is there, you guys can have a list of just organizing my head for each person you need. Their violations were found, and of those violations, what were considered to be one that violated the ethics. I know that there was questions asked where maybe the community voted in opposition to the question, but not found their community saying that it's ethical violations. It just kind of balanced that.
Yeah, sure. So with that, we can kind of just move through the documents related to the questions. So with that, this will be a little bit long, but I guess going through the first question was, did Lorenzo, Duell, and or Leatherman coordinate with Desolvera and or one another during the spring 2023 election for the purposes of A, B, C, and D? So for 1A, for satisfying that criteria, it was Lorenzo and Leatherman. The vote was 3-0-2. And with that one, an ethical violation was not found. And I can give a little bit of the rationale as we go. But the Office of Ethics did not necessarily see the idea of a candidate running on behalf of the community to be an ethical violation itself. Every single person has the right to, of course, represent any community they feel a part of, on campus, and Duplex is one of those communities that we would like to live in. For 1E, that one, I guess, validated or satisfied the criteria of dual environmental control, and the ones are all satisfied the criteria of that by, you know, like a high standard, but that was also not in the technical or in technical violation. Moving on to 1C, that one was satisfied by weathering, and that one was, I guess, or not, I guess, was found to be a violation for this one. Or I guess for the ones that were found to be a violation, I'll save those ones for the end to kind of display them. But yeah, moving on, 1B, so that would be opposite of sound, but the Lorenzo has satisfied that. But that was not an ethical violation because all of those claims, both facts and allegations that were made, had all happened before March 30th, which was before March 30th of last year, which is when the student assembly through the number of the resolutions is taken in the moment, and that's when the prohibitions on plate were put back. So in theory, between that gap between when or when the prohibition was lifted and put back, that's all valid activity, no ethical violation there. Moving on to 2A. For 2A, it's found that Lorenzo had satisfied the criteria listed or mentioned, again, listed by the Office of Ethics. For that one, it's clear and convincing that it applied. And it was not found to be a direct violation of the Code of Ethics. So this is one consideration that went into the document, which is more so that we limited ourselves to two main, I guess, no criteria of the one was in, and this is on page 31, right in the beginning, but this is section A, or this A2, which is this very old, I guess, written language that describes or abuse of the student assembly grant by members, staff, and other parties to acquire additional benefits or privileges. The Office of Ethics first found that C8. So the Office of Ethics interpreted this violation in its investigation to be improper or unauthorized use of student assembly name, reputation, resources, and or channels. And by channels, that kind of refers to more of a metaphysical idea of the assembly, meaning that, for example, the executive committee would be a channel. So it's the Office of Ethics, and so would this for all of those aspects. For personal gain or advantage within the bounds of the student assembly field. So it's special treatment, access to resources, opportunities, or favorable. With that, another sentence is applied to, I guess, sections E and C, which are also referred to as 023 and 024. Those are because we shouldn't, or this is all one report, but all three instances between those three set of investigations. It says that 2 because the first investigation is, of course, present in succession all the way back in May, so it goes 1, 2, 3, 4, we need to fill out the order. But I guess moving back to that, the Office of Ethics did not find any, I guess, violation of that, like, subsection A, little A, too. But it did share, like, or cite ethical concerns, essentially citing a concern about the lack of reporting to the appropriate bodies of the student assembly, which I think they're quite overrated. Moving on to, I guess, with that, that would be a good place to stop. Do we have any questions?
Thank you to you and the entire ethics committee for the work that you've done. I'm sure this has taken hours and hours, which us students know are pretty precious. So I guess with the extensive nature of this document, if the assembly were to adopt the committee's recommendations, what does that, how does the assembly move forward if it were to adopt the recommendations, what does that mean for the vacancies? I think it's a little confused on what happens moving forward.
Yeah, so with that, for the vacancies, I think that would be a better question for probably that. But to kind of, I guess, go into what, I guess, these recommendations would mean. 1 and 2 would essentially mean that upon the passage of Resolution 72, the student assembly would, I guess, kind of be held to conduct or to consider a motion to recall pursuant to Article 2, Section 4 of the student assembly bylaws of the Lorenzo and of Letterman. And with that, there's no stipulation of, I guess, what that would, or like whether or not the Office of Ethics would
means that it should be, you know, a yay or a nay on that. And that would have to combine all its past by 2/3. Yes. And then additionally, 3 and 4, the main difference is going to use shall, and 3 and 4 use may. So if, with the passage of 3 and 4, there is no hold on that. It isn't just listen often that somebody holds or doesn't want to. But the alpha stuff is found with 1 and 2 to, I guess, kind of use shalls, because it, I guess, needs analysis of all of the claims, all the facts, and also analysis of whether or not it, I guess, ethical concerns. There were a couple that reached that clear and convincing stage that the Office of Ethics found, especially consistent with, and I guess I'll give a brief background on this, that the Office of Ethics conducted some internal research, I guess, to kind of figure out a standard for considerations of removal. And what the Office of Ethics found is that that's actually quite low. The, I guess, most recent large removal of an officer from a position goes all the way back to the year right before my freshman year, during the, I guess, time of the CPD resolution. There, Vice President of Research and Accountability, which is a committee that doesn't exist anymore, and that Lieberman was removed by the executive committee. And they affirmed in a statement that they released to the Sun, also, you know, is, I guess, like, present, you know, on the web, it's also on the Imager, very randomly, that they, you know, due to the situations in the bylaws, you know, retain, or argue that they retain the right to do this, and that additionally, they retain the right to do it, like, when they wanted, and that they felt that the claims that were represented by then, by the then Director of Elections, substantiated a vote for removal. So utilizing that, the Office of Ethics found that that standard had essentially been met by the validations, and thus held that the Assembly should have the vote. But like with that, once again, the Office of Ethics doesn't stipulate whether or not it believes that there should be a yes or a no. In fact, the Office of Ethics holds no opinion on that. It really just contends that it believes that a vote should occur. And then with that, with 4, 5, 4, with 5, 6, and 7 specifically, those would work very similarly to, I guess, one of the recommendations that was instituted in Resolution 3, which was a very similar resolution to 74, which held the State Assembly to, I guess, adhere to the Office of Ethics' ideas in its proposal for continued governance and presidential succession. There, it was a situation that 73 Assembly must resolve its conflict between, or its perceived conflict between each other and the bylaws by a certain time, and by that time, Vice President Leatherman and the Internal Operations Committee drafted the changes to the charters that allowed for that. So it worked very similarly there, that by that date, a resolution would be expected by the Assembly that would, you know, address those issues. It almost leaves, like, a two-minute for the Assembly to be very global in it.
Yeah, I just wanted to thank you, you know, for your thorough investigation. I also had a question about, like, I know you're presenting right now through the question for parliamentarian, but, like, when can we, like, start discussing the implementation of these recommendations? Do we have to wait until we start talking about Resolution 72, or?
Yeah, so right after he is finished with his presentation, we will move into consideration on Resolution 74, and then you can discuss the merits of that resolution.
Thank you.
Vice President Lee.
Yeah, I just wanted to really quickly clarify, like, what exactly Resolution 72 is, and a quick question on that. But just to confirm, this resolution is going to be asking, or and the resolution, if implemented, would be holding the student assembly to vote on the removal of Clyde and Rocco from their VP positions and recommending that they hold a vote on the removal of them from their seats on the assembly. Is that correct?
Well, based on the title of the recommendations, I would say yes on both parts. That would essentially be holding the student assembly to hold those first initial votes, and then if you don't use a name, which is not necessarily recommended as a it's not recommended, but I would put it more so that it's presented as an option to the assembly. And that essentially comes more so from the cooperation of evidence that's about to pass both standards
which we don't think that perhaps in the consideration of the seat as well as that.
Kind of. I mean, like, I guess going to the question there was, like, why was there kind of an arbitrary distinction made between, like, removal from the VP positions and removal from their assembly seats, and, like, what went into the Office of Ethics deciding to remove them from their VP positions, but not going so far to recommend removal from their VP?
Yeah, absolutely. So that actually comes from Resolution 3, which takes us all the way back to the central succession. There, one of the biggest arguments that the Office of Ethics made was this idea of the distinction between an officer seat and a seat on the assembly, and it's specifically the mandate that comes from that. The Office of Ethics, again, in this proposal, essentially suggested that an officer seat, that mandate comes from the assembly itself, while a seat, that comes from the student body, and it held that seat really, because it comes from the student body, from constituencies, holds not more, but that it's a much deeper tie. So essentially, from that, or tying it to the presidency specifically, the Office of Ethics interpreted, I guess, rules all the way to 2008, before February 8th, I think, last year, I believe, even saying the exact one to do with that decision. But the presidency was specifically found to be both an office and a seat in that proposal, so that's actually tied to both things together, which essentially means that you need a president. In the Office of Ethics, you also need a seat. Essentially, there's a resolution passed back then, which is kind of prevents the court back then, the president was elected by the assembly, so they have their reasons to get elected by the student body. So the Office of Ethics is kind of more broadly involved. But here, essentially, the reason why there's a shall clause in the office is because a lot of these, especially passing by, you know, a claim in the those all passed by, I guess, section 5 of A, little a, 2, which is a few sentences in the grand, written very broadly, which involved the student assembly itself and wasn't set up by 2, which is involving the community. So essentially with that, the opposite believe that A is often these, or essentially off the facts of our balancing that with the allegations that we collected, that there was a larger warrant for a person to potentially be removed from their office seat than from their actual seat. And because the Office of Ethics did not believe itself, you know, I guess, not necessarily capable, but not wanting to impose that decision by having it all these shells, it instead elected to present that additional choice to the assembly. Itself to decide whether it believes that things are in here, and of course, the testimony directly from the physical manager do warrant their report to see. So it is more so to give an option to the assembly, if that is the question.
Thank you for your question. Okay, yeah, so it was just let me try to understand this question. The Office of Ethics thought that there was enough evidence to recommend, or like feel comfortable recommending the assembly to say removal from the VP position, but not enough to like recommend removal and like the constituency that
The Office of Ethics view both positions to be, or like a seat and an office, because it required different mandates, and it essentially. And I'm trying not to disclose it, but it essentially viewed that like an officer seat, because of how it was appointed by the assembly, was more warranted to be removed by the assembly, and that they see still, they believe, you know, was something on the table, but that it was to a lesser degree than in office. So in order to reflect that, it made the office part, I guess, the mandate, and it made the seat more of a flexibility.
First, I saw something for maybe this is more important. I guess I would say a lot of time is really when parents have to do some of it. But so this probably was answered like just a while ago before, but so essentially for like resolution 74, first of all, resolution 72 is something different, and I think resolution 72 is different. But this is resolution 74. Oh, yeah. And then, so at this case, as Resolution 74 gets adopted, that wouldn't be the motion to remove the WCs. But the OLSD, you would have to consider that after that, or you could just consider it like,
That would be a pretty simple.
Okay. And then, okay, so us voting on this is just voting, so consider that we don't have to, do that, whatever you want to say here. I would describe Resolution 74 as essentially it is a almost a call to action, but not a call for what the action is, essentially. So it's essentially asking that a vote be conducted, but it's not saying when necessarily the vote should be conducted. There's no date. There's no like it says, you know, when the resolution is adopted, or you know, if there's this essentially. Or you know, however else the assembly wants to go about it, but it really defers along that to the assembly itself. And then with those may clauses, it does that to the ingrained reading, because there is no hold, it's more so recommended.
Okay, thank you.
I just wanna double check resolution 73. Is that something we can access on the parks and the or is this?
Okay, 72 is just a mistype on the reporting report. But you know, 72, 74 should be, I believe it should be 74 based on the number we want. Yeah, my bad. That's entirely my fault.
I have a question on like the organization of the report. So in the table of contents, well, I guess in part one, on page 5, there are some like questions listed that are being addressed in part 2 and then part 3. Do these, like, does question 1 correspond to part 2, part A? Or, like, how is, like, A, B, C, and D, like, how do they get there?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. By A, B, C, and D, you mean A, B, and C, and D is within like, you know, part 2?
Yeah, so like there's like 4 questions listed on page 5. So like, does question 1 correspond to like part A?
Oh, no, I didn't clarify that very quickly. So moving through parts 2, 3, and 4, essentially how those go, is, and this is more so to break up information to, I guess, time and what they're based off of. So in 2A, that is information that we need all the way up about like April 19th. So it's all of the more individual facts and allegations up to April 19th. Then B is a discussion into the Cornell-Dennard facts. Essentially, the reason why B was sectioned out was because, you know, in draft of the officer that had stopped, it was a very jarring transition and thus separated it. And then C picks up exactly where A left off, but also there are some footnotes in B that mentioned, you know, like places where C is off as well. So essentially, in that section, you have like a very large timeline stemming all the way from, oh my god, my phone is there, stemming all the way from 2022 all the way to April 2023. Then you had B kind of stemming throughout the spring semester doing this almost side story. And then you had C picking up exactly where B left off, and or C picking up exactly where A left off, and also mentioning some aspects in B. And then moving on to, or moving from there, D is specifically, or C covers all the way up to the pre-organization meeting, while D then, I guess, is a short paragraph mentioning present in the session. The reason why that paragraph is so small is because the officer has experienced a timeline for presidential succession in our proposal all the way back in May, so we didn't necessarily view this report as a time to rehash that, and it also includes some extra claims that are more relevant to these. And then moving on to 3, that starts, or that essentially follows the appropriation cycle. So it starts from the beginning all the way through. The reason why it's separated between 1 and 2 is because we've been specifically specifically focused on in our 2 specific filing organizations, and 1 referring to other Odyssey, and 2 referring to GCAP. And then 3 outlines more ethical concerns that the Office of Ethics, and I guess to clarify why 3 is its own paragraph, is because the Office of Ethics, when it was originally drafted, did not find the integration of these allegations with, I guess, more concrete facts, or not concrete facts, but together with the quality by evidence to be appropriated. So it makes sure to make a distinction in its views of the two sections. even on B itself, references, I got or B references. B represents concerns more related to the elections, because it's the fall elections, and it starts all the way from February 9th. And then in four, there are no divisions, we have essentially one timeline attacking one person's concern. So to kind of go back to the values, I would say each general cluster, so just to go back to what I myself am addressing what I was doing. So questions addressing two is essentially the guide to section two. Essentially every factor associated with these questions is the answer or address in two. And in three, you can access three. But the numbers here don't correlate to that. And then going into section five, which is where all of the episodes are, from A, B, and C correlate to two, three, and four. So the questions from two are answered in A, the questions in 3 are answered in. Yes. 2 of them can answer in A, 3 is answered in B, and the last one is answered in C. Also, that was a lot of running numbers, so then we have any, you know, additional questions for the reason. Okay, so I certainly feel for myself, and obviously I appreciate the efficiency and professionalism of in which this document is written. But I think for the sanctity of everyone understanding here on the school assembly, and also for any students who wish to watch this recording and understand what's happening, I would desire a layman's terms explanation, but simultaneously, I want, you know, point of order, a question on if we pass Resolution 74, then to actually discuss and vote on some of the recommendations from the Office of Ethics in terms of what's going on. Will the entirety of the Office of Ethics come to present and answer questions, or will Representative Alison also be doing that? Because if he would be presenting there, maybe, you know, he could just present his opinions the way this comes now.
I'm going to leave that up to you, whichever way you prefer to present it.
You have to say that. So I have a deep desire to just hear, you know, in layman's terms from you, you know, just bare bones what you think the recommendations are and what specific violations occurred. Just, you know, word of mouth, not necessarily reading directly from the document. And/or that could wait if we pass Resolution 74 to, you know, hold the vote. Will the rest of the Office of Ethics, you know, so that you don't have to do it all by yourself, also, you know, be here to answer questions, you know, during the discussion and debate when we're voting on the recommended, you know, votes from Resolution 74. I know it's like a lot, but I think we're all in a bit of confusion of exactly what and how everything's going to happen. And in terms of just understanding the levels here, you know, in one go, what you think the violations were. Not necessarily going through all of the violations that you found didn't occur, but the violations that you found did. Okay. So, with that, I guess that's the first question. If all Resolution 74 were to pass, absolutely one of the Office of Ethics could be one of that. All who's a member of the Office of Ethics is there. The other members did not make it to the Assembly meeting, but they absolutely did. They could do a very similar as we periodically did last year. I guess going into that, that is essentially, or, oh, actually, I guess that passes me the Office of Ethics. It would be for women to make a women's strength version. But I would say that I am chair of the Office of Ethics. I'm director of the Office of Ethics on the Assembly. And because of that, I do not vote in my committee, and I also do not vote here. These opinions, these facts, these decisions, entire complete document works after it's done its entirety, and then it's juxtaposed with, you know, all of the information that we will see, every clause, every single, like, you know, indication of what exactly was it, what might be more corroborated, what could not be determined by the option methods. And I believe that speaking on it in layman's terms kind of waters that down, and it is not my intention to influence what the assembly thinks of this long document. I prefer to everybody to be shown the conclusions of it.
I just want to clarify, if we vote to adopt Resolution 74, we can vote to adopt the recommendations today after that?
It's a little free to do whatever it wants to put in colloquially. I think you concur from the things, yeah. Yeah, so if it passes, the assembly can do what it will with it. There's absolutely no situation to the opposite of it on what it should do. Very similar to presidential succession. I guess this is only me too, there's also the precedent for it, but at least in my time as chair, I've tried to draft resolutions on behalf of ethics or more so a place it and leave it rather than place it and monitor it, place it and, you know, enforce it. But that is just a question.
Sure, I just want to ask you first, thank you for spending so much time talking to me and putting this together. I just haven't had a chance to read all this, and I know you sent me the parts that relate to all of us are names, we were all sent yesterday. The facts that relate to us. I read those, but could you just summarize, even for me, because I'm still trying to figure this out, which ones I was actually found and where a violation occurred? I just looked at more and I couldn't even figure this out. And I think Representative Barry made a good point just in saying what's actually happened and what you found didn't happen and couldn't prove happened.
For that one, I'd be glad to do that. I much more that it would go a little bit slow just because it is no secret how sleepy deprived I am right now. I would be willing to essentially parse the document. Or in addition to that, especially since the office of ethics sort of didn't know you made any women's terms report, something that could be an option is, I guess, having that more simplified, almost executive summary version of the report. If people, you know, don't necessarily want to parse through it, I guess more so just based on, like, you know, more health reasons of what, you know, staying up for so many nights consecutively, I don't want to mess up on these maps on the floor. So I just, you know, I would love to, but it's more so that, like, I, you know, myself would, you know, have to second guess what I'm saying. So with that, I would draw attention all the way to, I guess, really the first section of B in 5, where it's mentioned in the last, but here the officer has found in the criminal of criteria to constitute violation of Part 5 of Section A, little A, 3 of the Code of Ethics, 5 and 3 of the U.S. standard. So that
page, please.
Oh, page on that is 35. 35, that is wrong. Yeah, 35. So essentially with that, I guess moving through, and this is a little more so immediately like along as well, the first part of that is, I guess, the general, you know, what must be observed is one, that, and I guess with this, it's more so, or to quickly characterize a lot of the AB, I guess, divisions in a lot of the, you know, I guess, considerations about ethics, it's more so that ethics is not necessarily placed a lot of value on any bias or intent or, you know, like anything that is happening in the head of, you know, a representative or a person. It cares much more about the arrow between intent and action, essentially, that it, that does A influence B. It's much more focused on the arrow rather than the A and B. So essentially, this is, or B essentially asks the question of, is there bias and was this bias? Oh, wait, no, that's a completely different sense. This is kind of in the first paragraph, or not the second paragraph. The second paragraph itself, there was, that was actually in the negative. To give, I guess, a quick rundown of question two before question one. Question two was a question, I guess, based off of court, with a 40 feet. It was responding to a submission or to the opposite of that, that is whether or not the DeLorenzo influence schematically. There, the opposite of it found no, with regards to the entire byline, found it a very consistent use of, I guess, like economic considerations were used for hedges of the byline. So it did not like that. Question one is, I guess, where I was at, which is where, I guess, a violation of 5A, little a, III, was, I guess, found. It's actually to get some background on that. It was a little bit of an instance with that paragraph, essentially, searching for this A, with members of the appropriations committee and by the way, they can feel that the environment is comfortable, and B, did this result in acting straight up by the Lorenzo. And in that aspect, the opposite of it's eliminated in terms of essentially resulting on the actions of the assessments. And there, the reason why that was, I guess, governed by creating this standard was because the opposite of it received an outpour of testimony from fire organizations and of members of the assembly that's out of the assembly that did, I guess, pronounce enough of a, clear evidence to members of the office that overwhelmed. I guess everything contrary to that. Or not necessarily everything after that, but it's just like a little bit more. For reference, clear and convincing is about 80% of the score, so there still is a 20%, which is reflected in the record that leads into question one. I can't stress enough that like reading section 5 by itself is absolutely not enough. Reading through all of that patterns are essential to being able to, you know, work your way there yourself, or even maybe even disagree with how the opposite of it's evaluated.
Well, yeah, firstly, thank you so much, Alison. I know you've been very closely for the past few weeks, and it's been good, like, your dedication. I think this is volumes in terms of like your work. So I do that, from there. But going back on to the section you talked about before, on some of the appropriations to the material, is it possible to know the ethics complaints submitted, which of those complaints in the organizations that initially received or is that not?
So the Office of Ethics, I only remember, I guess, the sections, but not the part of the bylaws. But it holds itself very hard. Sections 2 and Section 3 of this part of the bylaws that sit, it's only at the end, but I'm sort of like, let's just generally find it. But it holds itself to like a high degree of confidentiality. And in the code of ethics itself, it mentions that the committee is always reflected as confidential, even if they don't necessarily say they want to be confidential. So because of that, essentially, with all of the evidence, you know, solicited by ethics, you know, once all this passes, like that isn't accessed by ethics anymore. Be very similar to the, I guess, OSCCS. They do practice where they will have their student panelists, their staff panelists have access to, like, you know, a file of all of the evidence. And then after it's proven and done, that is pretty good. Or at least it's moving from, you know, like the panelist files. The ethics holds a very similar thing, because like, the only record that we're using is actually this organizational document. It's kind of passed down and requested for, this is how you set up the investigation. So because of that, I wouldn't be able to share how the, you know, like, testimony.
I was just wondering, like, if you had an estimated date on when the amendments come, when we, like, the flooding would be like separation?
No, so with that, I guess if you were always able to, I mean, because we mentioned that your text, I guess, like, mentioned being able to help out with that, but I would assume that that would probably be, or so assuming the text says after this Monday, that like, she could help out with maybe the more latest things version. So like I would work with her and also you know probably go with her if she was able to potentially have that need, I guess if anything on Thursday, if you know it would still require.
Right, okay. So you mean this
Thursday
for this
Thursday? What's the difference? I would say possibly a little bit more so on the human what happens on the floor, but like all I know is that for after Monday, a member of my committee would be, oh, I guess I have four freedoms to be able to make seven days of service documents. If it is, you know, we're requesting your time.
Okay, so I like going through it. I think a build concept itself isn't too important in terms of what it's saying, but I think just the formatting is just kind of confusing. So when you come to the first thing says addressing question two, questions addressing two, that so the upper block of questions that is going to be talked about in this section right here. Well, just to remove the facts concerning those people to somebody to explain to you. But then for like how do you go by line with freedoms? It's like for example, for questions addressing two, then number like question three, where would I find out like what the report found?
Okay, sure. I guess I'll like walk through. The reason why the report is kind of directed at this is because it's exactly how the investigation is directed. So essentially the investigation itself started off with two questions. So you down to two, you know, three and four, and then you go to the four itself, because like those questions are what inform the, or like those questions are almost like the parents of the three questions you would ask. So this is a condition about like these three accurate needs that you're trying to investigate. So essentially in every or essentially you have these questions, you know, questions you reference to each other, questions you reference to, questions you reference for, and in but the first two being born, you know, follow that and put the question into or what is actually do, how is that going to do? But in five, it falls the same thing. So A falls into two, B falls into three, and then from that, I guess.
Four is into two, B falls into three.
Oh, sorry. A falls into two. So all of the facts that are addressed in section two, you can find the answer to that in 5A. So all of the information projected in section two are then parsed and I guess considered in 5A. So in 5A, like you're reading all the facts for it, or sorry, a little bit different. So two essentially is all the facts that feed into what is being considered in 5A. And what's being entered in 5A are the questions that then, you know, it's actually a belief. Really, I guess what it's more so that like, the questions are addressed into are then discussed in 5A. And then so on. So like the questions addressing three are addressed in 5B. And then the questions addressing four are addressed in 5C.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. Thanks for all of your work on this. Just a quick question. You mentioned the doing this on Thursday with the Lindstrom version. I am, as chair of the election, I'm very concerned about this going on. The middle of the election voting starts in 14 hours. I was just curious, did you welcome a plan to remedy that or anything of that nature with this going on in the middle of the election?
Absolutely. So I feel like one of the reasons why we're meeting here on Sunday was because of concerns about the elections. The Ethics Committee and the Elections Committee have always held a close relationship since the, I guess, Office of Ethics was founded. So, but essentially, it is possible for us to work Monday through Thursday, but one of the costs of that that would have to be balanced, not by me, but by the Assembly itself, would be that that would be, you know, would that be during or after the election period? After that period.
During?
Yeah, so that would be during the election period. So it's more so when, whether or not, I guess, Lynn's version, I guess, is worth that. Just because, I guess, unless, you know, any member of the Lynn's
I just want to point out that that would be no larger numbers.
Point of order for the elections. If we did have the discussion and vote on Thursday, that would happen before voting begins, correct?
Yeah.
Our voting begins on Monday as well.
I also recommend that like
Because I don't think we're going to have time. I think we should vote today on the recommendations, the recommendations also soon. I think this, you guys need to look at five and correspond that to the questions the way that Al Hassan had explained. I feel like you guys, that would be sufficient information to see what was found and what were the, charges, whatever. Is the questions addressed into, and then that'll be a five, one section five, a, I think, once you guys do that, that will have enough information to be sufficiently informed in order to have the deliberation as a body. So if anyone wants to, oh, I can't do this until Thursday, I'll send you a couple of minutes looking at five, corresponding to that. Yep.
I guess just as a point of inquiry, and like I guess this risks sounding like a professor, I'd like love to know, and it like makes sense, especially because it came out only a few hours ago, how many people have, I guess, like skimmed to read this document. Okay, that's actually I guess with that, like I guess the point of inquiry would be if people do want more time to, I guess, like, you know, contend with like, you know, section five, would it be possible for us to, I guess, like break for like almost like a reading recess to be able to like
to end this lovely presentation because I believe that any questions that we can have for the director could be answered and asked to him, but maybe if we move on to the resolution, it could help move some things along.
Second.
Any dissent? Okay, so the conversation will now be about Resolution 74.
So I'll just briefly introduce Resolution 74. Resolution 74 is very similar to Resolution 3, if you remember from all back when, which is essentially asking for the student assembly to formally recognize the Office of Ethics's recommendations. The almost checks and balances between the Office of Ethics and the student assembly is in this action, which is that any recommendation that the student or that the Office of Ethics recommends has to pass on the floor of the assembly. So this resolution lists, just like Resolution 3 did, all of the recommendations that were proposed by the office. Reading down, 1 and 2 are essentially the same language, but involve different people, essentially that the student assembly shall, upon the passage of Resolution 74, consider a motion to recall pursuant to Article 3, Section 4 of the student assembly bylaws, Rocco Lorenzo, by the name of their respective offices, and then from there, 3 and 4. And that, I guess using a shall, essentially means it's something that, you know, would be expected to happen. However, all of that liberty is left to the assembly itself to, you know, have its own discussion and manage it. Additionally, from my end as director of elections, or excuse me, that is not me, director of ethics, I would not really be speaking on that. Essentially, everything that I would have to say about it is what my committee would have to say about it here. I would be serving the role that I typically, you know, serve in, like, a day-to-day assembly meeting. Briefly going down the other ones, Resolution 3 and 4 are similar, except those are more so an option. I would describe them more so, I guess, going off of, I guess, VP Greet's question. It's more so almost a tool basket of being able to choose what you want to do. So you have, like, you know, 1 and 2 as your necessary items, and then 3, 4, you know, onwards are, you know, extra. So skip 3 and 4 just because it's version 1 and 2. Essentially, 5, 6, and 7 or more of the recommendations that the Office of Ethics made when it found it to be an ethical concern that was only really, you know, passed by preponderance. So that essentially meant, okay, we found like a violation of, you know, this, like we believe it to have happened, but we also have to recognize we're working with a 50% bar, so we could 51% believe it to happen. So like there is still a chance that it could not be true. However, since we do believe it possible, you know, by preponderance, maybe it's not right to, based off of this, suggest a recall or to suggest, you know, removal from an officer seat, but perhaps something should be done about this if we are finding that there could be an ethical violation there. So there's essentially 3. 5 is, I guess, a general call for greater audit transparency on resolutions. I said, or I guess creating, I guess, rules to define, you know, what, how much you can put into a resolution before you actually get done. And I guess this more so comes from, I guess, some people call the Office of Ethics for reference. I guess it's really a good part for Office of Ethics inclusion. A huge chunk of the Office of Ethics is actually graduating. The Office of Ethics, the last time that somebody chose to look at the Office of Ethics was back in the 2021-2022 school year. So members of the Office of Ethics have seen and sat in for essentially almost 3 years of the assembly. And during that, we've witnessed a lot of changes in like what it takes to be a sponsor. There used to be that anybody or just a representative from last year, you know, the resolutions that had every single person listed, when in fact maybe only 1, 2, or 3 people are actually responsible for it. Because in general, I guess 5 of the assembly back then wasn't just co-sponsored anything. And then there's also more, I guess, like conservative members. I guess if I had to classify it across like this assembly as more conservative, that typically in the station, you have 1 or 2 sponsors listed. Those things have happened 10, 20 people listed on the association have seemingly departed. But essentially, this asks for that to be less of a trend in 3 years and more so in the years and resolution. Just because the Office of Ethics found some issues generally related to transparency, which I guess as I said in the presentation, the Office of Ethics asserted that, you know, one of the greatest things that the Assembly can do right now for community members and for student body is transparent, and that comes from one, you know, us talking to other individuals on the floor, but also being very forthcoming when sitting on the board with our own invention or maybe how to handle it. So 5 kind of, I guess, those that the these are open. For the assembly to define what it is. The assembly to define that you have to write that in the assembly, for example. And that would be okay on the situation 5. 5 is just that the assembly has to decide, and then it can be either this assembly or next week's assembly. That's also up to this assembly to decide, because the major really would have to be associated all the way through up to the first. 6 essentially comes from, I guess, some issues under the confidence about reporting to your partner on the assembly. And essentially, in that conversation, that, I guess, has to do with the quantity of all of the concerns and allegations we have heard in these past days. I would love to do this job, but getting, you know, bombarded like every single day of the week with a new email with like a bunch of speech officers a half a while ago can be disheartening, especially when, like, you know, I and my friends have been like the 2 years, right? And you'll see all of these, I guess, ethical concerns like, well, at the end. Kind of does, I guess, a question, I guess, like what the Office of Ethics is. And in a sense, perhaps the election committee's role is in the assembly. So this simply calls for the assembly to put the strengthening rules or really defining rules on, like, specifically the Office of Ethics. The Code of Ethics, which we shared that earlier, for example, that document hasn't been touched since like 2022. And it's an entirely different office of assembly now. That was during anonymous presidency. The demographic has changed, everything, you know, has changed from then. So like, this is a call for the system to reassess the role of this office. The Elections Committee is added just because the Elections Committee and the Office of Ethics have had a relationship that in relation to the election rules has changed over time. It used to be working currently and separately. So it also gets defined that, especially because as Dr. Thomas and I have talked about that again, the Elections Committee and the Office of Ethics kind of serve similar roles. Impartial as in, like, you know, I have a role on the assembly or, you know, on my committee, and my role is essentially to evaluate all situations on, you know, the assembly that has an impartial leader role in my committee for not documenting the room and also to do it for not documenting the room. So it's more so calling the rule on that. Then 7, to keep this very quick, is expanding the election rule. There's a mistake on the 10 student organizations in another group. In, I guess, the opposite of this is analysis of events, we found a glaring concern almost with the, I guess, the ability of people to sit on the assembly and have, you know, wonderful leadership outside, but for, you know, like, easy, like, I guess, current roles, they're being able to do. Essentially, but in theory, if you're representative sitting on, like, maybe you know what other representatives, at least in my understanding of the election rules, that'd be probably correct. We'd be only people who are required to do the roles the organizations that they're on, and like having those organizations not being any endorsements are members of the election committee, correct? Yes, so members of the election committee are audit. Any organization you're in can vote. I remember the last year I was on election, but I was president of four clubs in the but essentially this suggests that the potentially expanded part of the assembly, because it's quite frankly a similar standard, especially as people who stand on the assembly. But yeah, that just suggests 5, 6, and 7 of the rationale for those. So going into how the path of the ballot works, this holds the assembly on 1, 2, 5, 6, and 7 to do them. For 1 to 2, there's no situation as to when it should be done. There's more so that it can be done. 4, 5, 6, and 7, those should be done by October 1st, and by 3 and 4, those agreements would just be collected out of the bucket by everybody if they saw it fit. But again, this is essentially just like, I guess, an acceptance of the recommendations from the office.
Yeah, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, but I had emailed you about this at the beginning of the investigation about my concerns about like conflicts of interest in terms of like voting to implement recommendations from the Office of Ethics, and how like basically people who are implicated in these recommendations can vote on whether or not they should vote happy. And so I kind of wanted to make a motion to amend Resolution 74 to add be it therefore resolved clause that those implicated in the Office of Ethics recommendations, including Representative Rocco DiLorenzo and Representative and Vice President Clyde Letterman shall abstain from voting on the implementation of recommendations 1, 2, 3, and 4 due to conflicts of interest.
Yeah, so there is nothing in our charter that would allow this resolution to restrict the authority of a voting member to vote. And plus, you'd be adding an amendment to the resolution that would be, like, you're asking that Vice Presidents Letterman and DeLorenzo not be able to vote on Resolution 74, yet this would be amended. So in order to adopt that, do you see what I'm saying? Put a circle.
Yeah, they have to vote on whether or not we can adopt it.
Yeah. And plus, again, we can't restrict the ability of voting members to vote.
But, and I had asked Jessica about this after the student assembly meeting, and she said that I could motion to suspend the rules and at that.
Point of order. I'd like to leave my time. But correct me if I'm wrong, but I'm pretty sure when we saw ourselves in the office, we did say that we wouldn't vote on things that we would like to have conflict of interest in. So just putting that out there, that we all think that vote when we saw ourselves in the office.
Yeah, I mean, we can ask the vice presidents to not vote. And I mean, it is part of, you know, the oath of office that you will refrain, but you cannot like restrict through a resolution action from the voter.
So I was pointing out that state had a part of this resolution. It doesn't make sense why I would really say that other than even before that, this is simple from the report. But I'm of the belief that I think everyone, all of the people who were like the core of the investigation, the four of us, I think it would be really like solidarity.
So on that then, I guess I'll just make the ask very, very straightforwardly. I'll also, as a member of the assembly who's implicated in the resolution, recuse myself from voting on this. So then the direct question asked goes to President Keel and Vice President Letterman. Will you also recuse yourself from this vote? Beautiful.
Okay, so I think I'll be able to quite lame stands. What was found, but can you correct me if I'm wrong? I'm gonna dismiss this. So Delorenzo Letterman coordinated to protect his life during the single election of 2023, violating ethical standards. That was found. So for that one, it was, or I guess to be specific, it was found to, I guess, reference my document, so like, it wasn't found to be an ethical violation. Specifically,
was it ethical standards, but not violation?
Oh, I think which line, I guess, or not line,
or so this would be question addressing one, both questions addressing one, and question one, A, question A.
Yeah.
A.
So this is question one.
So, real quick, did you see that motion says 10 time?
Motion says 10 time.
Okay.
And so, yeah, I'm like 6:40. So, yeah, it says that they have satisfied their criteria for, yeah, they satisfied their criteria.
Yeah. So like, to kind of go over like the first step, and again, just like one of the things that we're like, you can satisfy the criteria, essentially, and let me just read this over quickly before I. It's more so that like, the criteria itself, when it's mentioned, is to assess whether or not like the question happened. So, like essentially with that question, like it might be in the paragraph underneath it, but just like clarify for the record, like in areas where there's a violation of a part of the rules, it is like mentioned as a sentence as a affirmative response. Or like for example, when you mentioned affirmative response request, you ultimately decided to not be a violation of this.
Okay, is there a way I can ask you this? So I'm just gonna read the lowest topic. So they were found to Delorenzo Letterman, so coordinates of essentially run during the spring 2023 election. But I'm not regardless of if it was applicable or if it was a violation, that's what they were found.
Yeah.
Okay. So then I'm gonna list to that thing just tell me yes or no from the month and being so of course so then 1B. Delorenzo Cool and Lenin were found to have opposed the statements or influences of the student assembly, but it wasn't even a violation.
Yeah.
Lenin violated ethical standards by looking space mating bands in spring 2023 election to benefit electoral ambitions. Yeah. Lenin violated ethical standards by specifically and compiling candidates to run together in a slate. Did that one be?
Yeah. So like that one is identically really, really because one C and D would have that very similar criteria,
presenting on that simple food grade is that Evans is really the very office found that from the best measurement to a clear means and standard to satisfy the criteria for C and the Lorenzo for B. So what is that? It's letter for 1C and Lorenzo for 1B and the other here 1C is the one that is tied to 5A2.
And for two, that Lorenzo possessed awareness of that severe Title IX proceedings before the conclusion of the terms of the election.
Yeah.
The utilization of the Title IX proceedings only allegations for political and personal reasons can be used.
Yes, good
idea. For three, Letterman actively mobilized Cornell Democrats and those candidates to form a coalition to address concerns about the severe before May 9th in assembly.
Is that something good?
Yeah. So Letterman actively mobilized Cornell Democrats, called Cornell Democrats and those candidates to form a coalition to address concerns about the severe before May 9th in assembly.
I'll come back to that one.
Yeah. Okay. So then four, letting utilize unofficial channels to influence representative opinions, actions, and amendments on resolutions presented in this event assembly.
Yeah.
Letting in assembled and influence members of the student assembly during the executive session during the May 9th reorganization meeting.
So just a bit about it. Are you in the 4B? 4B.
Or like part B, right? Yes, this would be section 5, section 5, A, question 4, B. That's it. So Letterman assembled and close members to the assembly during the executive session during the May 9th reorganization meeting.
Wait, sorry, just to clarify, so we're working with this one, right?
Okay, yeah, that last section.
Yes.
Is it answered yet?
Yeah.
Now we're talking about questions addressed in previous section B. So one, Delorenzo acted in a manner that led to uncomfortable working environment for committee members and ballot organizations.
Oh, yes, that constitutes an ethical violation.
Delorenzo didn't unfairly influence the budgeting of student activities within other organizations.
Yes.
Two, and Letterman appropriately addressed behaviors, actions, and concerns that reports from appropriation committee members and ballot organizations. Cool influenced the appointment process for student assembly seats, resulting in the dissolution of the Houston College of seat.
Okay.
Oh, also wasn't too good.
That's 4A, right?
Yeah.
Yes, 4A divided per Congress and not by the
who was found to have acted impartially during student assembly meetings. Who was found to have engaged in activities impacting voting on pro-Palestinian resolutions in the diversity, equity, and inclusion committee.
Oh, no. So, in that, was it like 4C was rejected due to lack of jurisdiction?
4B or 4C?
4C. The office letters moved to reject question 4C due to lack of jurisdiction. The office letters moved to reject questions 4D and 5. So it's only 4A, 4B, 5A, 5B, 5C.
Is then for 5A, Letterman influenced the selection process for the elections?
Yes, in the agreement, but no ethical violation was not.
Letterman pressured the director of elections regarding changes for spring 2023 for 2023 elections. Is that accurate or the same for the time?
Yes, but no ethical violations now.
Letterman influenced the drafting of the current spring 2024 election rules.
Yes, but no ethical violations now. Also, these are all just like confirmed. Like they didn't make it so like nobody got their moderates or not because like it was never or it never crossed the threshold of being viewed as an ethical violation. So it was just affirmed as having you know confidence from the office, but not on the 50% or 80%.
Now, just for the section C,
I was doing all at once, instead of actually getting some assistance from even assembly members to form a presidential candidacy and exchange for political favors. Team's collusion with non-democratic endorsed candidates couldn't be determined. The team's disclosure of information from student assembly's communications to reality couldn't be verified for personal or political purposes.
Yes.
So hopefully, yeah, I was listening. And yeah, understanding how what was said in the document, so we could vote like before.
So, Representative Benson?
Yeah, it was very helpful. So that was very helpful for what happened. I'd love if we could run through for what was found to be a violation or a non-violation. Because we started with just if it happened, or if we found that it did happen or didn't happen, but we didn't go through if it was a violation or not a violation. But we did that list. And like, for questions addressing two, for one, two, three, four, and then addressing three, one, two, three. We all did what happened, but we haven't even given non violations, and so, like, five, and addressing three. But, great idea, them all. Very helpful.
So to quickly go over it, so 1A was not found to be a mental violation, as in the order earlier.
When you're doing this, can you just read what, instead of saying 1A, 5A, just say like, oh, this was, and this was not.
So just to clarify, you prefer it as the questions that itself was read?
Yeah.
Yeah. For I'll also take some pauses later, but so next 1A, if there were some government doing A, the venue flight is not found to be a violation, B as well, or the three, the map is also not found to be that is blocking specific candidates or instances on the student assembly. C, with the saving bands in this 20 or in these spring campaign new elections benefit of the referral conditions, 1C, that one was satisfied by the yeah. And 5 business standard was due to a RP violation on a representative of 1D was satisfied as well, but not D to the violation to read that one out when D is listing and or compiling candidates to run together in a slate or in the CSWP. Even on PTA.
Wait, hold on, for clarification for 1C, 1C was found to be a violation.
Yes. Yeah. 2A, Lorenzo was satisfied to the criteria, was not found to be a direct violation. So that thing sort of that didn't violate 2, it also didn't violate 3, but there was an ethical concern listed. An ethical concern is different from an ethical violation. But the violation was more so we were able to link it to this rule. And ethical concerns, we could not look into this rule, but the election committee is the one that supported that also my bad. I will keep it this is it. The Office of Ethics still wanted to address some concerns if not with it overall, which it has been doing in this report. In 2B, we abstain the violation as potentially was unable to be discerned.
Sorry.
2B is utilized knowledge of Title IX proceedings. Or without a political or personal reasons, here in the same way, we take an unfortunate example. For that, it is impossible to truly, I guess, like, identify what some of these kind of voters are without asking them. Or think that was just like a mistake from voter AP, that the intention was probably unable to pass it as a benchmark. So moving into three, the three with the individual and so fuel, I don't know if it's actually mobilized from the gas and door targets on the public to the address. The sentence of a proposal there of four and many that to separate doing alongside other kind of items for that the three other than the rent out satisfy the criteria the vote of three two or three or zero two things. Clearing the distance and apply the constituting the technical violations. And four, we're filling up the two range, by the way. So, with four, we're running to utilize artificial channels, trying to facilitate them to kind of exactly to aim, with doing some kind of aiming batteries and then it's on refuge. Then we assemble and introduce up this assembly during the second year, we can actually have a meeting. Criteria to satisfy both. I think we can check that, but just like not a couple of those like on here. Which I just have to invite it to my way, so we can back to quickly set it. For that question one, yes, that it's found on the criteria to constitute in itself a violation of section A of the criteria. So yeah, that was found to be on the constitute violation by the moving on. Yes. For that one, sorry, I was reading off the wrong one. My apologies. For that one, the alphabetics upon the table to prove the facts, signs, both risk, changes, and evidence in the application. For other things, the like, if there's no regular clause of that violation, there is no regular violation bound. Every case where there is some bound, it's like you feel like which in that way, it's like they would be confident in that.
So he did it,
he did it, or like he completely found reason, but he did it, but upon analyzing it, did not find it to be a violation.
Okay,
this is on 35.
Okay.
35. Right on there.
So we're talking about page 5, question 4A, but the 35 is where you'll find like the answer.
Okay, yeah. I was looking at page 31.
There are hyperlinks like on the online, like with it on your laptop, like the table of contents works. But yeah, sorry for the confusing layout. I guess moving into section. So B, I was reading off of question A, and in that, that was found to be a violation of A3. Yeah, I'm finding out what's happening with my body. That one was DiLorenzo as chair of the Communications Committee acting in a manner that led to the comfortable working environment for committee members and five out of four managers. Yes. For two, we wouldn't find it a violation if it didn't happen. So, yeah. So for two, I'm sorry, for two, did DiLorenzo use his position as Vice President of Finance to unfairly influence the budgeting of the student activity in other organizations? Didn't satisfy the criteria at all, and it also, was found to be a violation. So, I guess provide more comments on that, this is really important. That's essentially what is found there. Is that like the semantic review for like the offset analysis of it seems consistent with each byline on like an empirics or economic assessments.
We've been on words to three, which he was letting appropriately address the issues of actions and concerns left reports from the appropriations committee. They satisfy the criteria for that, which would be analyze the things that have questions to do. So three is reviewed very consistently in like the criteria. So the criteria for A is actively identified and analyzed concerns and reports. And B is actually did not share concerns through appropriate channels available to them. So when it says in the affirmative, that one's like very confusingly. We'll probably go back to that, right? Essentially what happened there is that the question was originally written in the negative and was amended to be in the positive. Like the criteria itself or the evidence reflect that. So it says that it's affirmative, it's affirmative to the criteria. So instead, like what it says there is that, like essentially that we found the opposite of what the question would intend.
So you guys say what happened if you have that, I really can't follow this.
My apologies. Essentially what we found is yes to this is great family.
I think that what he said is that Hugh and Letterman did appropriately address that Hayden's actions did concern the fact that courts and appropriations committee members and my life are members of the chapter.
This is just written very poorly. This is like my bad for not double checking it. Essentially, the criteria in that section is written in the negative. So it actually finds the opposite of the question. So it finds that they actually like, because if you read on it also like this, I wasn't more so hard to concern. So it didn't constitute as the violation. But yeah, that's very confusing way. So we've got something to tie into that. Yeah, the ethics really sound
but it was a non-violation.
Yeah, there's not bad.
Thank you.
Sorry, that's entirely true. Moving onwards, consideration for 4 and 5, which we can read upon, 4 and 5 from the sheet song. So 4 and 5 are long stems, which include big fuel uses in the present of 272A and pursue the creation process in 272 and a matter that resulted in the creation of all these patients that we do. Fortunately, that is answered in the affirmative regions, yes, but by the comments of evidence that it found that it was, and also found it by which you have part A2 through the opposite way of it. Or, and there's a separate line that's like, that was determined like what specifically was written there. 4D was found in the affirmative on that. 4D was an interference with the selection of the record elections, but that was not found to be an actual violation. Given it was not violated. I'll probably put something like that. This is easier. So 4C5A. For 4C and D, those ones were, for that 4C was exactly the lack of jurisdiction, and 4D was exactly the lack of it. Yes. So the only system question for are A and D. C and D are there just for transparency, like was something that people were asked questions about, and that we were selecting out information to be accurate with what they were going on. So for 5, taking A, B, and C are sustained as in like those 4 questions that were answered, B was not. So for 5A, and this is the same for all of them, so 5A, and these ones are written correctly, so in 5A, influencing the selection of the directly of questions, yes, but no violation. For B, fucking directly questions, government changes for the spring of 2023, fall of 2023 elections, yes, there's no violation. And for influencing the drafting of the spring thinking for election rules, yes, and no violation. And then for the next section, which is C, what it says there is for one,
know the port to be offline, the same seat assistance from the summoning to support the question for candidacy, and same for the locations, no, no one is being constituted by it. And group two and three of those things were restricted here, essentially, for three. For three, specifically, engaging work, yeah. Obtaining this information from CSMU communications to the Cornell Amazon and or the Cornell dispatch that's word for personal or political purposes, that one was abstained from because the office of ethics found it to just not be as quickly and said of the more of elections to the kind of issue because it didn't relate that concern is worded. And evaluating two, the all six from voting, and two was community worker kind of like that. Or community work kind of like that endorsed kind of this week too, yes, because it's a political piece. So the one confusing one, which we just referenced that one again, is three. And when you did do a running book within the gas behavior tactics and concerns, such reports from appropriation to vendors and valuable formalizations. That's going to be affirmative with the criteria itself. So the affirmative is responsible criteria, not the function. Oh, this is going back to three. So did you do a running appropriate for the gas behavior tactics? And it seems that the person is appropriation to vendors and the final organization that wants to clarify this again. In terms of the question, it was found no, and it was found to be a violation. Yeah. Yes. Yeah, we also found that people were like, did not appropriately address the previous actions, and we say that the court strongly related to members and violators. And we checked off whether or not that was. I correct myself, it was not found to be a HIPAA violation, but it was still considered in the venue of recommendations. It essentially comes, and this is stipulated all the way to the top, but essentially some things that were found to be claims were not found to be HIPAA violations, but were still considered not concerning. As long as the election, as long as the ethics committee was able to find the review, they can still be referenced in the venue of, I guess, types of reviews. So no, there was not an ethical violation, but very similar to that other one, there was no ethical violation. The office will found it, I guess, useful to address certain aspects of it. But not the whole question.
So it's an ethical concern?
Yes, an ethical concern, just the question.
So representative. So for issues that like weren't in your purview, but were like more in the Office of Elections purview, does that mean there's a separate investigation from the election committee, or are we, or is it just like whatever they want to do, or like I guess I'm confused. Like if something was in the ethics purview, where does it go, or does it kind of just like?
Yeah, if something isn't in ethics purview, for example, there's one question that was specifically finding, which was, did you use the commission as president to do something to act in part later to do something new? That was found to be more of like a parliamentary type of question, so ethics didn't answer it. So for those kind of questions, those aren't like referred as like a, you know, like actual, like we did not like, you know, reach out and refer it, but like it is stated in the report in the event, like essentially in the same way that the recommendation can talk to, you know, the assembly, so too are all of these referrals, if it makes sense. More like police referrals. Because there's no action that the office of these things without the confirmation of the student assembly is actually acting.
So just to clarify, for a lot of these things, I know it's like, oh, they were found guilty of doing something that's like ethically questionable or whatever, or not found guilty, but there was a lot of evidence that they did things that were very ethically questionable, but they weren't violations kind of just because there aren't rules for them to have violated them. Well, does that make sense?
Not necessarily. Some of them are just things, I'd say. Like, for principle 1A is a very good example of that. 1A is like, you know, did Lorenzo fuel and other than where they chose the Silvera or go home or one another during this period of the election. Or is there some protective play? That's kind of kind of like a thing, and no level of like scrutiny or ethics was applied to it. It was more so this is a question that the committee drafted that we asked people for to be confirming yes or no. So like the yes or no affirmative is not prescribing any moral or ethical judgment on the issue. It's more so like it happened. Ethical judgment is only applied if there's an ethical concern attached to it or if there is an actual ethical violation filed.
Okay, so some of them are like, yeah, they did it, but it's not ethically concerning. And then some of them are like, yeah, they did it, but it is ethically concerning, but it's not a violation. And then some of them are like, you just can't talk about it. So, yeah, it's not an officer's job.
Yeah, some STEMs didn't have enough evidence, so those ones, you know, like, weren't answered. Some STEMs were found to be out of purview, so they weren't answered. Some question STEMs were also found to just almost like, or like, were rejected, for example, the ones that I mentioned, like, all the way over in the B section. So yeah, I would say that kind of really just that is like, not serious, but there are classification STEMs that we can put together.
Yeah, I feel like we've kind of been going in circles about this, about like what the violations are and all that. My sense with all of this is that like there's two very the violations for that are alleged for Vice President Dealer and the Vice President Letterman are very different. And I think it's inappropriate to be kind of combining everything together into one resolution. So, and you know, we can talk about this, but I would amend that we strike clauses, and then we pull up the resolution just to make sure I'm doing this right. Then we strike clauses, paragraphs 2 and 4 from the be it therefore resolved clause of resolution 7-4. Just so that way, you know, we kind of have a clean discussion on like each case separately rather than trying to lump it in. Things will get confusing. I know there's already a lot of confusion just because thank you for all the work you're doing, but the structure of the episode board was, I think, pretty confusing. And I feel like these discussions are really hammered that point out.
This side,
yeah. That is definitely the sense of the
So, potentially,
how
voting on the resolution is going to go is that, like, there's initially going to be, like, a vote on the entire resolution as a whole. So, like, that requires majority vote from the assembly, and then there's going to be a vote on each of the individual clauses, and we'll be approving them, like we'll vote on each of them, and each clause in the third vote to pass. So we will be like discussing each clause and each recommendation separate from one another. So I'm not sure if that is motion.
I sent an email out to everybody because I said you said it was still confused. So I sent an email with everyone just went over what was found and if it was a violation or not. Like, for instance, that everyone was found to be soliciting and compiling candidates and went together in a slate, but that was not a violation. So if you're confused, check your emails, call the investigation findings. Hopefully, it's helpful. It's everything you just talked about. So.
Okay, I'll let the president can respond, then
Jim Palmer. Is it, when you say we're doing 2/3 on each of the 1 through 7s, is that 2/3 of members present or is that 2/3 of seated members?
2/3 of seated members.
What is your 1 through 7?
1 through 4. 5, 6, and 7, if they are considered, would just be. I mean, those are governing document, the governing document for amendments. So.
And do we need to vote on option 1 through 7, or are we just finished there?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I would still maintain my amendment, just because I understand that, like, procedurally, you know, we're going to be going on all these things, but I think from the perspective of like the. What the precedent that this sets for, you know, future ethics investigations for the assembly as a whole, also for the messages that this sends to the broader student body and our private designer and the audience. I think we have to be very cognizant and very careful with each message that we send, each resolution that we're voting on, each, you know, whether even because if we do pass this resolution, regardless of whatever the final vote is, the message that's going to be sent is the student assembly recommends that. You know, Vice President DeLorenzo and Vice President Letterman are removed. And I understand that, like, in the technicalities or in like the the specific details, that's not necessarily the message that's being sent, but that's going to be what the implication is. So I think we should be very careful about how we're sending that message. So I would still, you know, propose that amendment.
Just say it.
Would anyone like to second that?
This one actually goes to our friend Hassan. So do you foresee the concerns that Vice President Curry just mentioned to be a concern? Like, do you foresee the concern that he mentioned to be like an issue in actuality when drafting or writing like articles?
I would say no. I think that we can clarify it. I'd also interview anyone who wants to clarify that as well. I mean, I would think it'd be a little confusing, obviously, if going through everything, but we're going to try to make it as clear as possible.
Can I just
agree
on
that? I believe that voting on the order, we can discuss it, like, the amendment, and that would be a conversation on that, so we do everything.
Sure. I mean, I'm sort of agnostic on the amendment in part because I have to abstain, but I do want to say one thing, right? All we've looked through better part of a year and a half now, and before anything else, I do want to admit, one, I've done made a huge number of mistakes here, some of which are, a good number of which are contained in the report. And I, on some level, want to personally apologize to all of you that my personal missteps have become an enormous distraction, not only for you, but for me and for people in my life. And for that, you know, I'm sorry, and I think this is sort of not what I want shared governance to be, and I think it really worsened the dynamic of the assembly, and I think that's problematic. And I also do want to say, and I sort of have to take personal responsibility for this, you know, being in a leadership position and how the appropriation cycle went down. There were a lot of good things, but there were a lot of problematic areas. And reading the report, it is evident that there was sort of an environment where people felt it was not fair and it was excessive. And well, I sort of didn't perpetrate that. I think it was identified that Patrick and I did not do enough to address that. And that's my fault. And I can talk about the other things, but those are things in particular where I felt I had sort of a personal degree of responsibility and that I didn't want to leave this meeting without having said that.
I think that this is a very thoroughly written resolution, and I think given the context of the that Representative Curry wants to strike is important, so I don't think that we should amend to just take out those like two paragraphs basically and remove that context.
Oh, yeah. I'd also like to add that, like, yes, it is very, you know, confusing written, but basically, like, there's a lot of stuff here, and you know, probably a lot of people, but I'd also like to, I guess, point out that, like, the document itself points out its own weirdness. You mentioned this one, I guess, in the after this impressive figure efforts on things. The first couple of sections about the background methodology and special consideration mentions the fact that this is essentially three investigations, mostly into one report, due to the, you know, need for all of this is happening now. For example, would I have loved to use these piecemeal? Yes. But would we have also had revelations throughout the election period? Yes. And I don't think any of us wanted that. So, like, I just wanted to, I guess, contend to that point, which is that, like, this is a rarity in itself. The document itself, you know, references that it is, you know, 2, 3, and 4, and something that itself also recognizes that. So, I don't think, especially as I think about the future of my community, I don't see this being something that ethics, you know, like, continues. It's like, this would derail how I view large and full messages.
Just for my thoughts on the issue as well, I think that if you can use any of these basis when we're talking about three different sets of members and people, and like, while I'm going to respond to it, you really kind of kill me and you can use money. But that being said, I feel like you're more clear to both the what is past and what is the question of time to provide this issue.
Wait, so you see right now that when you're
So I'm just confused. They want to separate, but we wouldn't be someone wants a motion or a motion to remove Rocco from my seat on 70. That wouldn't be the big thing that's happening with quiet. They wouldn't be separated. So the only one resolution, but it will not be debated at the same time. Is that correct?
Yes.
Yes, okay.
So Representative
Everett, I just have to go to end the vote of the amendment.
Okay, so that was 9-6 now, so
so if the two passes,
no, yeah, copies.
Yeah, so are we do that with plan nine, not voting.
Okay.
I instinctively voted.
Okay, motion to end the debate.
Okay.
On the amendment. Is that all? A motion to not end the debate, CC debate. On the amendment. Okay, so let's take it again. So Yes, now we're voting on the amendments. If you are voting in favor of the amendment. So we just voted to end debate on the amendment, and now we're going to be voting to, accept the amendment, and the amendment was to kind of separate on the charges against Vice President Lorenzo and Vice President Lorenzo Lines. Was it? Yeah, so I think I option four.
Could you repeat that? Because I don't think you actually mean, like, you said it would sort of separate the charges from the sign.
Yeah, so I think it would be to strike two and four. I had assumed that it would just be put to another resolution, but I guess in this case, it's the amendment on the floor is only to strike points two and four.
And also, another point of rule or point of regulation, and this is something for taking part, regardless of that, the resolution and access to remove Clyde or Rocco, we still could propose that regardless of that. It's in the resolution, is that correct?
Yes.
I have a motion to extend time, please.
You can say extend time to 6-7. So.
And second?
Second.
And then percent?
7.
So, all those in favor of this amendment, so strike lines 2 and 4, please raise your placards. And could this just be just like your vote, like when we proxies after? Proxies, so 8. Vote to like not adopt the amendments. That is a tie.
What are information?
Wait, no, are there any proxies that want to vote no? Okay. Okay, so then that would be 8. Yes, to accept amendment, no, 9, no. So we will not be accepting this amendment, that was me.
What information?
Yes.
Would being part of like the Cornell Democrats maybe like what is it called? A conflict of interest? Would that be a conflict of interest? Like, in the voting?
No, that's true.
Yeah. Who are the top five?
Yeah, they were talking about Sharon, so I was asking all this.
So I'm gonna.
No, Democrat in general, but like from the court now, Democrat.
Yeah,
not a Democrat, but core now, Democrats. So they talk about. That's another question.
I'm gonna pass out on this and I found you as you
explained. Could you repeat the question?
Since the Cornell Democrats are heavily featured within this document, would that like be considered, could that be considered conflict of interest in terms of voting?
That would be up to the assembly to decide, but again, going back to the charter, the assembly cannot restrict the ability of a voting member to vote. That'd be on their own decision.
Okay, thank you so much.
Representative Mazeta.
Who is a member of the Cornell Democrats on the assembly? Just to know like different like conflicts of interest.
I think having people disclose the membership of the orgs that they're a part of that goes against the freedom of association for some of the organizations. I could be wrong, but I know that there was something with that, with one of the resolutions we passed about Aiden and their exemption earlier on. So I think that kind of plays like that.
But I thought that was an exemption for Hayden and not for all student organizations. And I think that this is a conflict of interest in an ethical like investigation. So I think this is a ethical concern. So I'm going to ask again.
Parliamentary clarification, as you stated, and to my interpretation of the, you know, abstaining yourself from conflicts of interest under the oath, but not by the chapter or bylaws, the oath kind of functions more than as an honor system, more than a forced abstain if someone else deems it a conflict of interest.
That is correct.
So the assembly has no power to force people to disclose what organization they're in or to abstain themselves if other members deem something a conflict of interest.
That is also correct. That is not within the jurisdiction of the assembly.
Thank you.
So at this time, we kind of like are making the same point. Oh, okay, so topic to like President Duarte.
Thank you. I know that we're in the middle of the day, other things, but I do just want to clarify a couple of things. I thank Director Ender significantly on what you put in this. I did want to make a couple comments about some of the things that I was found an ethical violation of, because I didn't feel like I was really given like an appropriate time to respond to them in the ethical investigation, nor did I really feel like I was asked questions about them. So the first one, the appointment process for student assembly seats, student assembly seats resulting in dissolution of the community seat. That like very clearly is setting the ethical board that that is the process outlined in the charter. Like very clearly, like if that seat's not filled, then it becomes an undesignated seat. I also, per our standing rules, have the authority to appoint people to seats and then have them confirmed by the assembly, all of which happens. I also appointed Imani. Imani is my appointment to the student assembly. And so I know that I was found in ethical violation of that. I don't feel like I was given an appropriate time to respond to that. I don't know how I was found in ethical violation of that or ethical, not ethical violation, ethical, whatever you call it. But I feel like I did everything in my power to make sure that was a transparent process. And we even added in the new charter better appointment processes to make sure that it was more clear in the future and that the president wasn't appointing people. So I just want to make sure that was really clear that I did make appointments and they were also confirmed by the assembly unanimously. Both my appointments this time, which is unfilled, as well as last time. And I really did try to make sure that there was diversity and representation from the seats that were open and letting them fill an undesignated seat as per our charter. So I feel very clear.
So I'm gonna do Representative Zeta then you can
My question with what President Poole just said was like, was the ethical violation that was found with Clyde taking that seat, was that, was it that like, he's an ILR student and he took like a human ecology seat or something like that? Because wasn't it a human ecology seat that was then transformed into an undesignated representative at large seat that was given to Representative Lederman?
So to speak on that, I definitely come up with a question. I think President Buell or the board of education on that, I definitely encourage to ask you to such documents. And it's a feeling that, and this is entirely from what I remember from, I guess, like, listening and doing how the relations on that point, but primarily the actual appointment process is not a matter of convention. It is true that that's just how the role of assembly works. It was more so the influence aspect. It was more of, I guess, like, a focus around that, just because testimony that's reflecting in the facts, I guess, contend more efforts made by certain individuals on the assembly. You have the seats you filled by community ecology. However, I would also like to mention, I guess, the bar that goes down, if it's not found here, and or it's not down to a high 80% degree, it's not quite low, and that's as a direct response to that. There is an audience, it's more so 50% of it's in fact, which should, you know, be probably much lower.
Do you
really?
Yeah, so I just want to address that, a couple things among them. With that in particular, I mean, again, this is one of the areas where, you know, President Peel said, that just occurred automatically that it became the seat. I mean, we had, you'll remember that meeting where Pedro was kicked out, there were 14 people in the room, 16 members of the 31 member assembly. There was a lot of different vacancies, and I actually didn't even get appointed until about 7 weeks later, because I didn't want to be on the assembly, and President Peel had asked me to, and this is my testimony, because I was running for council and didn't have the time, or thought it was going to be a distraction. But beyond that, I just looked at a number of these, and I want to point something out, because hopefully I've shown sort of where I feel like I made mistakes, but in the areas where there's sort of ethical violations, I feel either there's more context, or it sort of doesn't sort of make sense. I mean, so the first one is protecting Greek life during the election last year. I just don't have any power over Greek life. Like, I'm not a member of Greek life. I've been to a single frat party in my time at Cornell. I just, you know, like, I have no power. I think this is the whole narrative that somehow I do. I don't really know where that's come from. I wasn't even on the assembly last year. And as you met all of team, like, we didn't even consider anything related to Greek life this year, in part because it never came up. If it did, I would have voted what I thought about it, but it was just one of those things where I've seen this year, and I spoke to Al-Hassan extensively, but it just didn't make sense to where that arose from. Two, and I think this is an area of poor judgment of mine, the slaying ban. I had drafted language to change the election rules last year, and I had passed it along to two different people on the assembly. And in retrospect, I think I'm glad we kept a prohibition on candidate coordination, but I also just do that in my regular course of business. Like, I wrote the bylaws for Rockland County Democratic Committee, and I did a lawsuit over that, which we won, but which was actually still an election. But I just do that. Like, I just write draft things. I was asked at the time to do that. I thought it was going to be a good idea that candidates who are pro-labor, a number of whom are on the assembly now, would be able to work together. So in retrospect, I wouldn't have done it, but I also sort of wonder how that rose to the sort of level of an ethical violation. And the third one, and this one has particularly come up, was the removal of Pedro Dasaldera. And there's been a lot of sort of different narratives out here, and I can tell you what I knew at the time, and hopefully that will inform your perspective. I was told by a friend of mine on May 1st, I had to recount this extensively, we saw him on the ballot. He called me and told me what happened with the Title IX. He was actually there contemporaneously with the incident that happened with Survivor. Shortly thereafter, I asked him if he could go to Survivor and email Title IX and ask what we're allowed to disclose publicly. And I sent this to the ethics committee, and we didn't email back to Title IX, but said, if it was disclosed publicly by the survivor, they would count that as retaliation and could significantly damage the likelihood that the survivor would be able to prevail on the test. And so what I just thought to do at the time was the right thing to do, and you can all question this, was say that if Pivot us with their loss, we wouldn't do anything because Title IX was dealing with it, but the survivor would be kept private. And if he won, then we'd have to consider it, which is what ended up happening. And we did it very carefully. It was not the survivor, but it was a friend of the survivor who wrote something, right, who said, oh, well, I saw this happen contemporaneously. And I haven't disclosed it publicly yet, but you know, the day afterwards, and this one's in my standby, the person who survived came up to me when I was in the dining hall and asked me to pass along her gratitude that the assembly did this. And I don't think it was a bad situation that we could have handled a lot better, but I also think we just acted clearly and decisively that we had some of the serious allegations against them and we removed them. And I think there's sort of been an attempt publicly, in part because this was all spawned, as I learned, by Peter Dossel-Barrow leaking his text messages to the Sun, right, to rewrite this narrative. And somehow he wasn't as culpable as he really was. And but that I stand by 100%. And we were all in the room when that happened, and I know they made a note that I should not have been in that executive session, and I shouldn't have been. But I also, no one at the time objected to that, and I felt comfortable being there. And anyone in the past year had a problem with that, I would have preferred they either told off the song, brought it up to me, brought it up to President Thiel. But more than a year has passed since all of this stuff has happened, and no one has seriously raised this as a concern as it relates to policymaking assembly or my ethical or moral judgment. I think that comes back to the final thing here, which is I mentioned I communicated through unofficial channels. I wasn't really clear on what that meant or what the violation was there. I think, again, like I made some mistakes, but in that case, I couldn't particularly tell. But I also just want to point out, there are a number of serious issues that happened here, almost all of which were out in the public. And this was made an issue right before the election. That's what I have a particular problem with. And like, my girlfriend was public, people personally threatened her about this, right? Like, that was just not right, and that's what like crossed the line. I chose to be here, that's on me, right? I bear the responsibility for that. But this whole thing has gotten particularly nasty, and if anyone at the time had wanted to address these, which in part with some of the stuff that Patrick and I had tried to, I felt like it shouldn't have brought up at the time, but this is sort of revisiting it now, right, as you know, elections begin in 10 hours, and I just chose not to run again because of what happened here, and because of who filed this complaint. And I will say, and one other issue I want to address is related to, you know, what happened with Ascom, which is that I know Patrick and I had a number of conversations, and Patrick and Vice President Lorenzo had conversations about what happened with GGAP, and they were deeply dissatisfied, and that if that sort of thing happened again, there would have to be serious conversations about Vice President Lorenzo's standing, and that's mentioned in here. And I regret how that was handled, but I also think that's one of those things where it is being revisited. It's being revisited now, as all of this stuff is, not really in the interest of justice, but because we have an election upon us. That I sort of find to be problematic. And also, and I will say, as it relates to Pedro Balsavera and the survivor, it's just not good that these are being revisited, especially as it relates to her, when it's just so long has expired, right? And I don't think that's fair. And so, like I said, I've made a number of serious mistakes here, and you all can determine whether or not that warrants my removal. But I didn't want to say that without commenting on at what point these things happened, what I felt the severity of them were, and what the actual outcomes are. And I'm happy to answer any questions to that effect.
I'll allow Chairman Dunbar
to respond to another law. Yeah, sure. So I guess in response to that, I would suggest, like, definitely, you know, read your report, but also, like, absolutely listening to as regardless of what happens, maybe, you know, like Resolution 74, every person has a chance to defend themselves. I specifically, I guess, want to address, I think, where this is going. This is less so a conversation about Section 5, but more so the conversation about Section 2, 3, and 4 for reference. All directly mentioned individuals, like the four who were involved, were sent line by line of every place that they were mentioned in the facts. And I guess one thing to mention there is that the Office of Ethics is about 40 people people on the assembly and off the assembly, and in compiling our report, we also, and in also like other groups as well, we also like, have almost an unspoken duty to ensure that all these perspectives are represented. And in that, like, I'll quickly go into, I guess, because it has been referenced multiple times, what the process was before reviewing all of the comments I got back from, I guess, the four individuals. With that, they were reviewed, and for some of them, revisions changed. For example, for one of them, revisions was neutralized. However, these other contentions tended to arise when it was testimony versus testimony. And there, the office ethics almost unanimously had an issue with, essentially because the four individuals had, like, we interviewed them, and they had an additional chance to respond, while other people, especially as that was in the first letter half, would not have had that opportunity, and we did not want the report to become overwhelmed by a specific side. There are multiple parts of it. I would recommend taking these issues reading through the back out of the system. It is why I'm saying, like, absolutely for this discussion, you should read this in 5, but it's good to also read through 2, 3, and 4, because a lot of these nuances are addressed. Some in more neutral language, some in, I guess, not the language that some people may have wanted or expect to see, but ultimately all testimony, you know, especially against other testimony, was balanced in a way to not find a middle point between them, but to ascertain or just present every different side. Almost every single instance where this is an issue also ends with a line of the opposite of it is not able to actively determine the veracity of these claims in order to get the whole sides out there, but not have a report tell a side where we could not do as if we aren't all seeing, we can't do like see every single person. So I just want to reflect that. I guess I did that. I'd also like to reflect commentary about Peter Desilvera, former resident of the assembly. In that, and specifically in section 5, the officer of ethics does not find a problem with the removal of Desilvera. The assembly in the charter has the right to, by you know, 2/3, recall any voting member, and there is no reason, there are no reasons to do it, but it's something that just can be done. The officer of ethics had absolutely no, I guess, questions about that. The officer of ethics had more so of an issue, especially in that, like, I guess, like, TV area of the meeting itself. The complaints there were not about necessarily, they weren't necessarily about what would be discussed, because that was found to be like, you know, a valid argument to have. It was more so the fact of like an isolated conversation that happened prior to a meeting that ended up having a lot of people be on board before having time to discuss it on the floor. And the verbiage there reflects that the operating methods view that to kind of be almost an advantage, especially like when applied to more of a broad base. And then in theory, if you have or if you set a precedent for being able to set these meetings ahead of time, you will have coalitions of people who have are privy to knowledge that other representatives aren't, and this comes from the fact that not every elected representative was at this meeting according to you, or as could be best cooperated by that. So essentially to coalesce that read sections 2, 3, and 4, but also as we go on, definitely listen to you can say President Jewell, our Vice President Brother, President Lorenzo. The office of ethics spreads that, especially like in their opinion, is having to really represent every single perspective. But representing every single perspective also involves balancing them and not picking sides in a document that was intended to be useful and broad.
Okay, I'm gonna have a few things to say. One, just quickly in response to something I said, I think the reason why these things are coming up now is just that, like, the courage to say some of these things. I know for a long time people had general member sentiments that they wanted to report to the office ethics, not the things so that like article 1 on our son, and some dispatch that's why they're coming up now. Because like, oh, election year, so it's like, oh, a conspiracy. But then the second thing I wanted to say, I feel like it's sort of exhausting, like, what we talk about in terms of the topic, but before like, I put the motion, I would just have to say that the Cornell Democrats partners included time to approve these documents. And then I said, one of the lines that I'm letting them respond to have actively mobilized the Cornell Democrats and their senators to form a coalition to address concerns about the legal reform of the NPC assembly. And so I know that was possibly a violation. I know you can ask motion to you guys not to vote on this, but I think that in sort of like integrity or that you actually not vote on guards to collide. You can talk to the vote in terms of what's a lot about, as I said.
I'll be the same thing.
I'm not talking about going out of the minute, so I have to sort of listen to you guys. Add on your eyes. Being that it is still happening and you're not having you guys not involved with this. And also, this is the last thing. I'm just being a little open to be biased. I'm biased. I have my own personal opinions, but I think we should be acting more so off of what is in the documents and what is being said versus like, oh, this is my friend. Granted, I'm not like you guys, like trying to say, like, I'm not open to be doing is like, I feel like you shouldn't be, oh, I'm having your back. So I'm going to vote, I'm not going to vote you out. So if you do something, I think you pass my vote, you should be only on the taking card of what you do right under the assembly. You're not on your mind, this is something you this will be created, especially given that this was created in such, like, to be a critical thing at Cornell in response to such strong action. It's what they will just create to vote. But, yeah. I want to also motion to end the day. Why I won't vote.
What's that?
So, point of order, are we keeping an end of it? Because didn't we end the amendment vote things?
Yeah, so we're just
going to debate
while we're going to now.
But, so we're like in the debate for like.
You're like making an amendment not pass. What was that? Yeah, making an amendment that on the floor 5 did not pass. So now we're going to be voting to end the debate. Yeah. Just listen for information. I was going to be more than
so if you pass it by the end of the day, then go on the
resolution. Yes, we're going to be going on the resolution as a whole, and then we'll move into like individual points.
Different. So
yeah.
Even if we pass the first one,
yeah.
This one will be
yes.
The first one has to go on what?
It's just the resolution as a whole, like just like accepting the recommendation. Well, not the recommendation, but.
You disagree with one of
them. Yeah, well, if you disagree with one of them, you can then vote on it. Like individual points. So like page 1, 2, is it 1, 2?
We're going to individual one.
You have to adopt
the resolution. Use a microphone.
You have to adopt the resolution all together. But the right solution doesn't say that all of these need to happen. It says all it says is that the assembly shall vote on whether or not that's what we're voting on.
This
we're voting on whether or not we should vote on whether to implement the right.
Oh, not just to vote, to consider.
Yeah, to consider voting.
Okay. Wait,
but does it include, does the first vote include accepting the recommendations for like movement?
It does not.
No, it does
okay.
Not. It's just a vote for
the information. Yeah, so right now we're voting to end the debate, so if you don't end the debate, you can speak.
Will there be individual time to debate each of the subsequent items listed in the resolution?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay, we're not voting to end the debate. If you're in favor of ending the debate, please raise your thumb or not.
Because we will be debating if we actually vote on each individual person.
Yeah, okay. Okay, so anyway, that one to end the debate that have a coffee, that you have to debate on coffee. Okay, so that was not yes to end the debate. So for those who don't want to end the debate, please raise your bracket at this time. Okay, so that fails. And that passes, right? That passes. We'll be ending the debate, and we will now be voting on this resolution. And we need a majority of the, like, all seated members of the assembly.
Can it be a roll call vote?
Oh, those here. Of those here, so that you have this pass.
You need a what?
A majority of those here.
Can it be a roll call vote?
Point of opponent, your brain. Should we do where we retain each title and then we do the whole thing?
Okay, I have my point of information. What are you talking about right now?
Yeah, we're going to keep it the way that it is.
I'd like to motion to extend time because we have 7 more things to debate on.
Yeah.
It is 6:51. I have meat marinated at home. I would love to push this along. If you have more things to say, you have seven more opportunities to say it. But let's say, and everyone gets to respond that it is implicated, you know, but I think it's time. And I'd also like to motion to extend time to 7:30. Is that too many time? We have 8 minutes.
Okay, if I got everyone's attention, right now we're gonna do a roll call just to like see who's here. Because we might not be out to the majority of the time, so that's because we're gonna do a roll call. Yeah. This is not for the role, this is easy.
Present.
Shamal Chan.
Present.
Dr. Lorenzo.
Present.
Zora Jerome.
Present.
David Liao.
Present.
Clarence Ezra.
Present.
Christian
Illinois. Okay, so I have 29 voting members, 23 here with counting proxies. And then who is abstaining?
I think that would be 6 votes.
So that takes us to what? 17? Please check it out. 23 minus 6. And 2/3 would be 20, according to my math. But Nicholas has to check that. So we can vote on the resolution, but you want to have 2/3 to the table.
I just want to step in here. Okay, let's be realistic here about these only. Okay, two of the members are not up for re-election. Three of the people under them are not up for re-election. So whatever is deemed about their participation of violations or not should not really affect the election because there's no votes that can go their way. The only member where it would be relevant would be for Ting, where we found all three no violations, so no evidence. So if we wanted, the only thing that we would like need to do is get, you know, three members to somehow vote
you know, so that we can get a majority vote for her. And I think that would be the only member that would be relevant to affecting the election, which is the whole reason we held this meeting today in the first place.
So could I have a motion to extend time 15 minutes? All right, that passes.
No.
Okay. So right now, well, the motion on the floor was to vote on the resolution.
We have to vote because we voted to vote.
Yeah,
right. So we're just voting to adopt the resolution, but what she's saying is that we can't necessarily, if we voted on those seven questions, we can't pass any of them.
Correct.
Okay,
no.
So then let's just vote on the resolution.
Yeah.
So would it be possible to, just in the interest, because we're not in, to vote on the actual rules, would it be okay if we just give all the people who were, you know, accused of them the ability to at least, at the very least, just respond? Would it be possible to suspend the rules and go back and get into the resolution?
No, let's just.
They will have an opportunity if we vote on it this coming Thursday.
We're voting on the resolution without actually giving people who are, only two of the four people who
the are resolution is to vote at all and debate the entire issue, not to, and for the Sun and Dispatch, you know, if you're out there. It's not convicting, it's not saying someone is anything, it's just following a recommendation to debate and vote on if it should happen. Not even at all that the members have even committed violations in the assembly's opinion. I understand the concern and I get that Huell and Letterman got to express their opinions and I feel for you, Rocco, but as long as you're here for Thursday in any form or fashion over Zoom or whatever, you will have the opportunity to give a piece. And I really feel for you, but like, we all gotta get out of here.
Point of order, can we vote?
Okay, so right now, if you vote to, like, in favor of Resolution 74, please raise your falcons.
Yeah. Is there, any parliamentary procedure that would allow us, once the opposition, to give one member of the assembly that to speak?
Yes. We can do that.
What is that?
I mean, there's not an official name for it, we can just allow people to speak.
So, if you want to favor this resolution, please raise your placards. Okay, yes. If you have a bill of proxy, I would like to vote in favor of this resolution, please raise your placards now. Okay. If you are voting not in favor of the resolution, please raise your placards. Okay. Any proxies for voting no? So, okay, so in the vote of, was that a vote, Agnes? Okay, so in the vote of nine, in favor of the resolution, please raise your placards. The resolution passes. Okay, what was that?
It was speaking in the thing.
Yeah, so
I'm giving my proxy vote to Wallen, Jamal Wallen.
Okay, that's going to be the
So, to kind of start all of these aspects off, I think personally, you know, I want to apologize for some of this stuff. I knew it all came to light in not necessarily the best way. And I recognize the damage that on the cause, not just on myself, but on many other people in the community. I think diving into this, in terms of the appropriations committee, and not dealing with that this past year, you know, the allegations that, you know, there were some belittling comments that were occasionally aggressive, with some accounts suggesting that the frustration that I had was just from the lack of financial reporting. I think think we start this part off right. The VP financial is extremely challenging. And you need to be very, very tough and ambitious with whenever you deal with money, especially in this context when it's not forthcoming as everywhere else is money. I can confirm that all the organizations were treated fairly throughout this entire process. I told them that since day one, since the pre-student assembly SAF process meeting, we promised them that we would be treated fairly. We're going to be giving basically equal treatment across the board, but this is going to be a quantitative process. For anyone who experienced, throughout appropriations committee, some emotional affliction resulting from that meeting and your feelings and your feelings, I'm deeply sorry and I apologize for this and this might have caused. Throughout this past semester, fall 23, when I did oversee the team, I was committed to organizations that facilitate a fair, equal, and standardized process across the board. Upholding these principles is a central responsibility within the VP finance role to ensure financial accountability of funded organizations. Each organization had a standardized qualitative and quantitative reporting expectations, which, although thorough, yielded a much more precise calculation than the final VP. In terms of the, moving on now to some of the other stuff about, talking about Pedro and the wife's prior knowledge that that might have had, and some of the other aspects after the meeting dealing with it. I'll just kind of give the full rundown to piggyback off what Alvasan was talking about earlier about why isn't this reported earlier and gave some numbers in advantage. A lot of those text messages and those screenshots could not have been sent in the format where Pedro would have been the recipient of that due to the nature of the offense. So between mid-February and early April, Pedro contacted me multiple times to provide details about an ongoing interpersonal relationship and throughout this communication resulting from the shared details after asking Pedro if he was aware of any reports that were filed as a result of the release of the proper university channels, he indicated that reports were filed. Due to the frequency of the communication and communication from Pedro indicating his intent to file a counterclaim against one of the initial complainants, I attempted to further distance myself from Pedro starting in late March and throughout April 2023. These attempts included multiple instances where I did not reply to text messages from Pedro and intentionally did not invite him to my 21st birthday, which occurred the 3rd week of April. To my knowledge, before May 2nd, previous communication led me to believe Pedro's comments were only related to one singular report being filed. And since Pedro had confirmed to me that a report had been previously filed related to him, I did not need to take any additional action at that time to ensure that the proper university channels were notified of this and that they were actively dealing with it. On May 2nd, following a conversation with another assembly member and their request to meet with additional details that they recently learned about Pedro's previous interpersonal relationships, we met in person. And during this meeting, information concerning Pedro's interpersonal relationships, which we had separately received in the past, was discussed. When the totality of this information, including previous communication with Pedro, was established chronologically, details of a completely different interpersonal relationship that Pedro had with another person began to align. To the best of our understanding, these details indicated a high likelihood that Pedro's previous actions would be classified as prohibited conduct according to policy 6.4 within the procedures of the Office of Institutional Equity in Title IX, and that these actions were not yet reported through the proper university channels. From the time of the conversation on May 2nd until the announcement of the election results on May 9th, the reputable individual I met with on May 2nd began working to understand better the desires of the other party involved in Pedro's interpersonal relationship.
including understanding their willingness to file a formal complaint. From this communication, it was understood that due to Policy 6.4 limitations, should any further action be taken at that time, it could infringe on the previously filed Title IX case involving Fraser Escalera. Moreover, throughout this communication, the other party involved in Fraser's interpersonal relationship indicated that they do not want to bring up details surrounding this interaction with Fraser at that time, unless the outcome of the presidential election results in Fraser winning. Since many individuals did not believe Fraser would win the presidential election, the individual was reassured that further details would only emerge following their expressed consent. So, following later on about actually going through the day and midnight for meeting Pedro and having that meeting, and that in itself being a full violation, at that time, we really did not know the full extent of some of the things going on in Pedro's life and the various interpersonal relationships that he's dealing with. Because we're so tightly close to Pedro throughout all this, and we had a lot of stuff that he had sent us previously, there was full cooperation and participation. Is given through the proper university channels related to any reports or formal complaints against Pedro and that further itself. When he was removed, around 1 p.m. on May 9th, the release spring 23 election results indicated Pedro's victory in the presidential race and Fairfield's victory in the executive vice presidential race. Following the email from Pedro to all newly elected representatives indicating the transition meeting would occur at 5 p.m. on the same day, a reputable individual was able to contact the other party involved in Pedro's interpersonal relationship. The statement was obtained after navigating the restrictions outlined in Policy 6.4 procedures about sharing details related to possible prohibited conduct. Next, nearly all of the newly elected representatives were informed of the 4 p.m. pre-meeting to discuss the further information surrounding Pedro's and personal relationships. When the 4 p.m. meeting began, the information related to Pedro was discussed at length, and documentation of Pedro's previous text messages and the statement were shared with the IDs. After the discussion, there was a unified sentiment that Pedro should be removed from his position after he was sworn in. Moreover, after discussing who should be the individual to make a motion to remove Pedro at 5 p.m. meeting, it was decided that I should be the person to initiate the motion. The justification for this was due to documentation of my previous communication with Pedro concerning this interpersonal relationships. Additionally, unlike Patrick Peel or Claire King, who were presidential runner-ups and the newly elected executive vice president, respectively, I do not have a conflict of interest and would have nothing to gain by making a motion to remove Pedro. Later on in the ethics report, there was, I believe, a section about soliciting. So, did DiLorenzo coordinate with Dasilvera and or one other during the spring 23 election for the purpose of soliciting and or compiling candidates to run together in a slate or loosely associated group? The only time I can really recollect on this scenario of what might even be considered would be on March 18th, when testimony and evidence reviewed by the office confirmed that I had sent an email to the IFC community through the IFC listserv, simply advertising the upcoming spring election, and that this was the only communication to the IFC community about possibly running for student assembly throughout that spring semester. In all honesty, that was the only time they were ever contacted about potentially running, and the email was meant as just advertising an opportunity. Just provide a description of what the student assembly is, what their participation in it, if they were interested in meeting for them,
And then it followed up with the link to the election's website as well as the for the upcoming candidate interview session. In terms of coordinating with the major compiled candidates, I think he thought early on and throughout a majority of it that just simply by associating himself with me, that automatically meant that he somehow get support from people, but there was never explicitly an agreement for any sort of endorsement or backing on either of our ends. So later on, there was information that alleged opposition to a specific candidate throughout this previous year, and that sort of inspiring either me, Clyde, or Patrick to run. And so this individual is one of the core sponsors of Resolution 16, and then a refund, which we can go into right now. I held positions on Cornell IFC Tech Board as a VP of Membership and Alumni Development in 2022, and President from 2023 to early March 2024. In November 2022, as a response to the recent campus events, since I was on the IFC Tech Board and Student Assembly at the same time, I helped to create a resolution titled Resolution 12, Supporting Survivors.
Do you have any money boxes? So I'm curious.
I created Resolution 12, Supporting Survivors and Facilitating Harm Reduction Strategies in Cuba. The resolution was co-sponsored by all of the IFC and Panhellenic Executive Board members and it led to the development of actionable solutions to further sexual violence prevention. Yet, at the final meeting of the semester on December 1st, 2022, Resolution 16, condemning Cuba, was shared with the Assembly members only 1 minute before the meeting started. This resolution included distorted and unsubstantiated descriptions of specific Cornell IFC factors, as well as inflammatory generalizations, such as fraternities on misogynistic, racist, transphobic institutions that perpetuate sexual assault and harassment. Resolution 16 expanded on Resolution 12 by describing fraternities as regulating themselves through the IFC is unacceptable, and calling for the formation of a separate body from the IFC to hold fraternities accountable to the consequences of the actions by individual brothers in the chapter as a whole. While I acknowledge and value perspectives of the Resolution 16 sponsors, since I was elected as the incoming former IFC president for the 2023 year just 2 days before Resolution 16, I was alarmed by the proposed outcome. Moreover, the generalizations levied against fraternities and misrepresentation depicted of several chapters at Cornell would be used. Throughout this meeting, I attempted to propose edits to correct Resolution 16's factual inaccuracies, but this effort was ultimately unsuccessful. Some other representatives also questioned my ability to even participate in the discussion or vote on Resolution 16, setting a possible conflict of interest due to my concurrent relays in the IFC and the Assembly. Ultimately, I was forced into abstaining during the final vote, and the resolution passed a vote of 16-0.
I have Dr.
So this meeting and the interactions throughout it left a lasting impression on me. Even when the factual corrections could have been made, I was disheartened by the eagerness of other representatives to endorse a resolution that central purpose is to stereotype a group of people in the Hispanic community that they want to have. The IFC president is designated as the official spokesperson for the fraternity community. So after Resolution 16 was approved, I felt as if I had already failed my community. The demeaning remarks about my community felt targeted.
and coordinate the effort to conceal Resolution 60 until the beginning of the meeting appear to be intentional. So addressing that, one of those sponsors was the person that we allege to have coordinated the running dates. And so, you know, other, I would just like to note that, you know, just because someone has a belief, you know, obviously it's not right to just run to run against them, but, you know, as it stands, very, very recently, others, you know, some of the candidates in this room running for an upcoming election have recently tried to garner support from a constituency they aligned with by stating that they should run for the assembly to fight back against people like Dr. DiLorenzo. Then they advertise themselves as a resource. They say, I'm a resource, please use me, and I'll do whatever I can to help you navigate the process. So, just with that, you know, I think it's not necessarily right, you know, to direct and culture, but, you know, maybe just an accountability for being action president, also on the same assembly. I think that's up to my situation. One of the last aspects here about, you know, struggle mentioned the group life, this is the last item. But I think I just want to be out there that, you know, since this past year, May 23, the student assembly has diligently worked to build a stronger Cornell community by advocating for students, breaking down barriers, and implementing tangible initiatives to improve the everyday lives of Cornell community members. Specifically, the dedication of the executive community members was essential to facilitate these changes and be role models for other assembly representatives. Members of the executive community often work together on different projects. Support and allow for a set of diverse perspectives to develop a better initiative in the end. What began as a lofty idea that tossed around in our shared executive chat ultimately landed to a $400,000 budget increase to start there. As the person who initially began to work on this, I would not have been able to complete this project without the support and contributions of Patrick Peel, Bob Biederman, Suraj Free, Harrison, and admittedly, by working closely together in the capacity of the assembly, I've formed close relationships with many of my peers, and I've gotten to know them more outside of shared extracurricular. However, some of these friendships that I have formed on the assembly have been misinterpreted to be evidence of a political machine that can directly exert control throughout this organization. This preconceived notion is entirely false, and I can confirm to the best of my knowledge that machine-style organization does not exist and has not existed in Cornell University State Assembly. As stated above, the term machine was first explicitly used by Pedro, and while I wholeheartedly believe it is the running inside joke, his application of the term likely did not have the same protections. When referenced in previous text conversations, the term machine was improperly used describe the potential constituency engagement that could possibly occur if fraternities felt like they were supported. I've consistently put forth my best effort to maintain a clear separation between my roles in the ILC and the student assembly. However, as Resolution 16 showed, there are many instances where the interest lack, and it makes it very, very challenging to confirm the uphold the responsibilities of control. Principally speaking, student assembly representatives are supposed to represent the interests and needs of their respective communities. Yet, if a representative serves an additional community outside of their elected constituency, it is reasonably expected that they will serve the other community as well. Ideally, this plan should extend to all constituencies that comprise the Cornell community. But in practice, there are unfortunately outliers that are not given the same opportunity. Thinking back to Resolution 16, it became clear that it did not matter what concerns I raised about that resolution affecting my community. Representatives had an unwavering predisposition that were unwilling to compromise on. Historically, I'm almost done. Okay. Can I just? Alright. So, time for 3 minutes. Historically, fraternities and sorority members have consistently been underrepresented in forms like the student assembly compared to the general Cornell population. Correspondingly, I believe that more representation of fraternity and sorority members on the assembly
would allow for better discussions to occur, even if it was just one more perspective they would provide. Encouraging members of the constituency to run in the upcoming election is a core tenet of increasing civic participation in democracy. As a result, an email was sent out to the ISU community on March 18th, which contained links to the candidate info sessions and election website. Ultimately, after accounting for all the efforts I made to mobilize students to vote in this election and endorsement from the ISU, both Patrick and I lost our respective elections. If a machine of fraternity and sorority individuals existed to influence the assembly, the fact that I lost this election directly counters this claim. The increased streetlight voter engagement seen in spring 23 election most likely occurred because the community knew me already in a different context, and many were willing to take time to vote. The enthusiasm to advocate on behalf of fraternities is full of attention, and originates from my desire to have the community be justly recognized as any other community would. Regardless of external involvements, the relationship between Patrick, Clyde, and myself is simply that. And I appreciate calling them close friends. Throughout our daily lives, our support arises from this camaraderie and has been misrepresented as proof of a machine that influences our shared governance.
I just motion to extend for 5 minutes.
Yeah. Yeah. Most people spend time at 5 minutes.
Second.
Thank you. All right, y'all. Thanks for the patience. We mentioned civic engagement, right? And what we previously heard Guki De Lorenzo mention, that there are candidates in this room encouraging people to run. I'd like to say that was me, first off, and I had the receipts proof. But since we want to talk about civic engagement, let's talk about why I encourage women of color and other marginalized folks to run. And it's because in my time on this assembly, as the only other woman of color on this board, I have seen sexism firsthand. I've seen misogyny while discussing candidates for leadership positions and the unequal standards in which we hold women candidates to their male counterparts. And I've also seen blatant examples of transphobia from individuals in power who believe that there's only two genders. I also want to state, regarding a lot of the allegations within the ethics report, that I am not affiliated with the Cornell Democrats, and that in my participation within the presidential succession, that my intention has always been survivors and people first. At no point was my involvement in this presidential succession for opportunistic gain. And if you don't believe me, I've openly advocated for transparency since last spring and even before that. I pushed for the Office of Ethics to be the body to review presidential succession at a time when groups from a specific coalition were actively pushing back against it. And if you don't believe my intentions, let my work speak for itself. From last spring, my involvement supporting a survivor of sexual assault from being re-traumatized, which was then widely spread amongst the New York Times, to the condemning sexual assault resolution, where many of you saw me in this very room advocate for why we need proactive consent education and campus sexual violence prevention. And if that's not enough, you can also look to my time working with the Cornell Coalition Sexual Violence Prevention and the Office of Title IX Institutional Equity. Let's make one thing clear. I'm not someone who needs to collude with the Democrats or any other group. I don't need this to win an election, and I've always been able to hold it down on my own perfectly fine. Thank you.
Motion to adjourn.
And thank you, Alison.